I call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my privilege to be your moderator for the 2011 annual town meeting. I've appointed longtime resident and former selectman Kirsten Rupenian to be the assistant moderator in case we need to have folks in the cafeteria. She will be presiding there. I declare a quorum present. Let us show our appreciation for the sacrifice of the men and women in our armed services who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan or are serving there now, particularly those with Sudbury connections. Rather than listing them all on the view graph, in prior years we've missed a few, and rather than do that, I'd just like to thank them all and have you do the same. Thank you. And let us remember the words of then-Captain, now-Major Dennis Ford, a Sudbury resident, a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, who addressed this body just 4 years ago. He said the following, quote, "There are still many places in the world that you cannot debate openly and participate in the democratic process. Although we as a society may not all agree on every issue, we do have the freedom to debate openly and participate in democracy. My fellow Sudbury residents, you are the legislative body that will help shape the future here in Sudbury. Let me remind you to be civil in your debates and fair-minded in your votes, as well as cherish the tradition of freedom we all share in the United States." End quote. Someone just stole my thunder, because my next announcement is shut off all cell phones and any other devices that emit noise. We'll now go to the Pledge of Allegiance. As you know, each year we have the pledge led at the annual town meeting by a student from Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. This year, that person is William Beckham, and we'll ask him to step to the mic in the front of the hall. Will is a senior from Sudbury. He is an Eagle Scout. He will attend Tufts University in the fall, majoring in international relations. He plays drums in the band and is a member of the Frisbee team. Will is the winner of the DAR Good Citizenship Award. Please rise.
Would everyone please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Will. Everybody standing at that door, please come forward. If you have a seat available next to you, please raise your hand. Folks standing, please find a seat. And while we're at it, the warrants were mailed to your home address, but if any of you forgot to bring yours, please raise your hands and we'll have the Boy Scouts bring them to you. Raise your hand if you do not have a warrant. Anyone else? Just keep raising your hands and the Boy Scouts will get to you. And while they're doing that, I'll go on with the preliminaries. The certified free cash, according to the town accountant, Barbara Chisholm, is $249,418. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the office's return of service, and confirmation of timely delivery of the warrant to the residents. I recognize Selectman Chairman John Drabinski for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual meeting, the office's return of service notice, and the reading of the individual articles of the warrant.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. So moved.
Is there a second? Yes, there is. All in favor, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? I see no one. It is unanimous. I'd now like to introduce to you, particularly for our new attendees, the town officials. To my right is the town clerk, Rosemary Harvell, If you'd be kind enough to raise your hand when you hear your name called. Assisting Rosemary tonight is Lauren Goddard of the town clerk's office. Assistant town clerk is Judy Newton. She's retiring, so she's not here tonight. But I would personally like to thank her for many years of dedicated service to the town of Sudbury. To my left is Selectman Chair John Drabinski. Next to him is Larry O'Brien. And next to him is Bob Hardy. Town manager is Maureen Valenti. Town accountant down here at the table is Barbara Chisholm. Assistant town accountant is Robin Porcella. Director of assessing is Maureen Hafner. Sitting to my immediate left is town council Paul Kenny. At the view graph is Mary McCormick of the Selectman's office. Sitting behind her is Patty Golden of the Selectman's office. Elaine Jones, who manages the town's legal department. Mark Thompson, sitting right here at the view graph, our technology administrator. Finance Committee to my far left, Bob Jacobson, Jamie Gossels, Tammy Dufault, Jim Rayo, Chairman, Bill Nealon, Jr., Marty Raganese, Joan Carlton, Chuck Woodard, and Bob Stein. Our Assistant Town Manager is Marianne Bilodeau, right here in front. And our treasurer, collector, finance director, all rolled in one, Andrea Turkelson, down in front. And I'd also like to welcome to our annual town meeting the newly elected moderator of the town of Wayland, Dennis Berry, who's sitting way in the back in the non-resident section. Did I miss anyone? Okay. No, he's got to wait. Coffee and snacks in the area where you checked in tonight is sponsored by Sudbury Destination Imagination, which is an international youth-centered program emphasizing creativity, problem-solving, and teamwork for students K through 12. They are raising funds to send three teams to the global tournament in Knoxville, Tennessee, May 25 to May 29. LS informs me that you're welcome to bring water into the auditorium, but no other food or drink. Other announcements, please register your interest in serving on a town board or committee by going online or calling the Selectman's office. Please consider how you might lend your talent to town government. Some committee memberships do not require a great deal of time, but all provide valuable contributions. Fire Chief Miles reminds you that there are two exits in the rear of both the floor and the balcony of the auditorium, as well as the front of the stage. If we need the auditorium, the same is true. Bathrooms are located across the hall from the auditorium and across the hall from the cafeteria. There are materials on the tables where you entered about various warrant articles. There are also extra warrants. I think we already gave them out. Now, I'd like to introduce, if they're in the hall, our state senators, Jamie Eldridge and Susan Fargo. And if they are not, then I would like to introduce our state rep, who is in the hall, Tom Conroy. And Tom has a presentation he'd like to make very briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, very, very briefly. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for having me here. Michelle McDonald is a school committee member here for the Sudbury Public School System, and I am honored and privileged on behalf of all of my colleagues in the Massachusetts House of Representatives to honor her tonight with a citation and thank her for her very valuable service to the town and the Sudbury Public School Committee and the entire system. Her dedication and commitment are exemplary, and she is very, very much going to be missed by the whole school committee team. And I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of everybody at the State House, and we're very grateful for your public service. So, Thank you, Michelle. As many of you know, Dr. John Brackett has been the superintendent of the Sudbury Public Schools for some time. And I have had the privilege of getting to know him and working with him. And quite frankly, I wish I had more opportunities to do so, because he is as many of you know, and I've heard from school committee members and parents throughout the town, he is a consummate professional. He is a visionary educator. A dedicated public servant, and he has been a tremendous asset for the entire town of Sudbury. And so I would also like to present him a citation from the Massachusetts House of Representatives, and it reads that we offer our sincerest congratulations, Dr. Brackett, in recognition of your successful career as a dedicated and visionary educator, and your contributions to the residents of Sudbury through your extraordinary leadership of the Sudbury Public Schools. And the entire House of House of Representatives in Massachusetts extends our very best wishes to you in your future endeavors. And again, we are very grateful for all that you've contributed to the school system here in Sudbury. Thank you. Thank you. And Susan Giuliano also has some words I think she wants to mention about Dr. Brackett and introduce his replacement.
That's right. Thank you, Tom, very much. On behalf of the Sudbury Public School Committee, I have the pleasure tonight to introduce Dr. Ann Wilson, currently Assistant Superintendent for the Public Schools of Brookline. She will assume her new role as the superintendent in the Sudbury Public Schools on July 1st. So please join me in welcoming her. We asked her to commit to staying even after sitting through town meetings. So, all set. I'm also going to briefly comment on behalf of the school committee to say thank you to Dr. John Brackett. As noted, he'll be leaving his position as superintendent here at the end of June after 8 years of exceptional leadership at the helm of the Sudbury Public Schools and 20 years as a school superintendent. Dr. Brackett came to our district with a motto that's become more of a tagline, more than a tagline. His improving on excellence philosophy has proved infectious and today serves as a touchstone throughout our district. He came here to improve on excellence, and he has succeeded. Despite considerable challenges, Dr. Brackett has led our district with an unflagging focus on the paramount importance of student learning and well-being, and with creative approaches to problem solving and an eye towards long-term solutions. He has throughout maintained a commitment to engaging all stakeholders and to enhancing the transparency of our process. And he has done his job with personal integrity, grace, and good humor. So please join us again. We were trying to coordinate this. Join us again in thanking Dr. Brackett for all of his work on our behalf and wishing him the best with his future endeavors.
I recognize Selectman Larry O'Brien for resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the past year. Mr. O'Brien will not read each committee that the decedent has served on, but they will be on the view graph for the entire audience to see.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to our community. James Attaway. Earl Borgeson, Elbert Clark Sr., Robert Hamill, Marilyn Haley, Philip Lindsay, Patricia Lockery, Deborah Lubash, Helen Nealon, Donald Pierce, John Plunkett, Howard Porter, Frederick Scott, John Taft, Ed Thompson. And be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their contributions to our community. Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year several of the citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us.
Thank you. For many years, it has been a tradition at the annual town meeting to honor one of our citizens who has performed valuable service for the town by asking him or her to make the motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor Edward Kreitzig. Ed moved to Sudbury in 1953 and has lived here for the past 58 years. He's been a Board of Appeals associate 1956 to 1958, Permanent Building Committee 57 to 62, Board of Appeals 58 to 62, Selectman 62 to 65, Route 20 Study Committee 70 to 73, Route 290 Trans Corridor Committee 70 to 72, Inflammable Storage Bylaw Committee 81, Route 20 Task Force 86 to 87, Design Review Board 86 to 88. Ed was a founding member of the Buddy Dog Humane Society 50 years ago, and today he serves as its chairman. Ed, as some of you know, is legally blind, so the arrangement we've made is that Ed wishes to say a few words about the town report, which he had someone read to him, and after that I'll have someone make the motion. Ed, would you like to say a few words?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Yes, in having the town the article and the motion for Article 1 read to me, the word "and to consider the content of the town report" struck me, and I dwelt on it for a while and considered the meaningfulness of what we find within the town report. In the early pages of the town report, page 60, I think, we list the number of volunteer activities that totals over 11,000 hours of volunteer time contributed, and these are by selected service groups. My curiosity led me, with the aid of someone else, to go through the town report and add other activities, such as the athletic programs, such as the garden clubs and the Sudbury Angels, and the other members of the town boards and committees that give their time on a voluntary basis. Many of them are seated on the stage behind me right now and have been and will be for many, many years to come. In help in coming up with a diagnosis of what we had here, I found a total of 155,000 hours of dedicated, volunteered, contributory time by citizens of this town. Over 150,000 hours of time is given. And I'm thinking, this is the woof and the warp. This is what the town is woven of. If we think of the things that we would not have in this town if it were not for these volunteers, it would be a shell. Take a look at the flowers that are going to be blooming at the Landham Road, traffic aisle on Landham Road and Route 20. And as Myron has pointed out, the continued work of Buddy Dog. So The town thrives, lives, and will prosper. With this type of volunteer input, so much of it unrecognized, that tonight the thought occurred to me that we should express our recognition, our appreciation, and our gratitude, so that when a vote is called for Article 1, it is by rousing exclamation of thank you to the volunteers.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. I'm going to ask Selectman Bob Hardy to read, make a motion under Article 1.
Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2010 town report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Is there a second? There is. Finance Committee, I assume, takes no position? And the selectmen want to say anything? Nope, we're all set. Any discussion in the hall? All those in favor of the passage of Article 1 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is, as Ed said, by acclamation. It is unanimous. And now it's time for me to review with you, particularly our new attendees, some of the procedures that we use at town meeting. I hope everyone has had a chance to review the warrant and familiarize himself or herself with the summary of basic town meeting procedures and the motion primer. It's in the beginning of the warrant in pages Roman numeral 2, 3, and 5. For those of you who just came in recently, you didn't hear me ask for everyone to turn off their cell phones and any other devices that emit noises. When you are recognized to speak by me, please give your name and address clearly each time you speak to assure a clear audio tape record so that town clerk can transcribe the audio tapes. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your card. Do not stand at a microphone. I will be able to see you in your seat. If you are sitting near a standing mic and I recognize you, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, wait for the Boy Scout runner to bring you a handheld mic. The mic will be on. You do not have to blow into it. Just speak, beginning with your name and address. We are using the runners from Boy Scout Troop 63. The Scoutmaster is Fred Rust. And the three runners that we have today from that troop are Tyler Darcy. Raise your hand, Tyler. Where are you? Down there. And Liam Dunphy. Liam's over there. And Tim Dunphy is right here. Thank you all very much. The reason why we use runners and the mics, obviously, is because the rows here are very long and uninterrupted, and folks in the middle can't get out to speak to a mic. The all motions of substance, and that includes main motions and motions to amend, should be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the ViewGraph in the front of the hall. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when first recognized and not at the end of a question or a statement. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town and regional school employees and our elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows, to the left or the right, in the back of the hall. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern not to bolt the hall as soon as you have voted on the matter. You will be showing your neighbors a courtesy by listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. Town clerk has asked me to remind you that voters must be physically present in the hall at town meeting to raise their card and cast their vote. No one may raise a card to cast the vote of another voter. Please be reminded that if you present or speak on articles, the bylaws state that the presenter will speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes. Kindly plan accordingly, as requests to exceed these limits are not granted freely. Having said that, just keep in mind that President Abraham Lincoln in 1863 gave a relatively important address called the Gettysburg Address. It took him 2 minutes. The 10 minute and 5 minute limits do not require you to speak for 10 or 5 minutes. Vote counting takes considerably longer in this auditorium because of the very long rows with the no aisle breaks, as we've discussed. So please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the standing vote is obvious, I will call for a head count by tellers. Also, any presenters of articles, unless you move in the words of the article as printed in the warrant, every presenter must tell the hall of any word changes in the motion and how they differ from the words that the voters saw in the warrant. If you wish to vote on an article and you are at home watching these proceedings on cable TV, I strongly suggest you leave well before the discussion begins on the article you're interested in, so you have adequate time to park, check in at the tables inside the side doors, and find your way to the auditorium before the doors are locked during the vote count. It would be unfortunate if voters cut it too close and got shut out of the vote. If interested, you will find the percentage vote required for passage of an article set forth in the warrant next to each article. A brief comment is in order on reconsideration, given that it was requested twice by losing parties at a recent town meeting a few years ago. Both lost overwhelmingly on the reconsideration vote. There is a long tradition in Sudbury of only granting reconsideration in very limited circumstances, namely, when there was such misstatements of fact that enough voters would have voted differently on the original article so as to change the result of that vote. In the 40 years I've lived in this town and attended town meeting, I have seen reconsideration done successfully a handful of times. And the reason for that is that there are many town meeting attendees who vote in favor of an article that fails, but still vote against reconsideration of that article, under the theory that they've had their bite of the apple. Please, no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. I'm going to repeat that one. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. If you do, your right to speak may be terminated by me. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on each article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. As President Lincoln said in referring to our open town meeting form of government, quote, "But in a New England town, the government is literally by the people governed, acting on each problem as they individually deemed wise. No more perfect form of democracy exists," end quote. And we should all cherish it. Recently, there have been some disgraceful comments by some politicians and frustrated Americans of different persuasions, as well as by many talk show hosts. This is a reminder that any such behavior will be dealt with firmly by me. Allow me to read to you Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 39, Section 17. "No person shall address a town meeting without leave of the moderator, and all persons shall, at the request of the moderator, be silent. If a person, after warning from the moderator, persists in disorderly behavior, the moderator may order him to withdraw from the meeting, and if he does not withdraw, may order a constable or any other person to remove him or her and confine him or her in some convenient place until the meeting is adjourned." Keep in mind, we may be here till Wednesday. I hope never to use such powers. I recognize the Chair of the Board of Selectmen, John Drabinski, for a State of the Town address.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and welcome to the 2011 Annual Town Meeting. In the 2009 Town Meeting, Selectman O'Brien, in his remarks, he emphasized that anything else going on in the country from a state and national economic focus is important. But we as a community need to be locally sustainable. We need to protect our own quality of life here. No matter what the state or federal government does, our responsibility for our town's physical health, our excellent educational system, and providing the myriad of services that our fellow students require and expect start here. So what have we been doing then to be more locally sustainable? First, the cost centers have renegotiated the health insurance benefits with their employees. At the town, the Sudbury Public Schools, new plans were implemented with the agreement of our employees that more closely parallel the benefit features that are common in the private sector and also offered by the state of Massachusetts and the government insurance group plan. For all cost centers, the employee contribution levels and their health insurance benefits have increased. This results in both a yearly savings in a magnitude of approximately $1.5 million from the previous plans, but also slows the rate of increase of the employee benefit line in the budget, which has been the fastest growing budget line for the last decade. Many of the sustainability ideas the selectmen have been working on, including recommendations made by the Budget Review Task Force and other town communities that echoed efforts already underway, have been developed. These include payment in lieu of taxes, purchasing streetlights to save costs, donation program to give donations to town, as well as use of CPA funds to acquire open space and protect our historical heritage for generations to come. Smart regionalization efforts continue. We have a successful agreement to share a position of park and rec director with Wayland, and the savings are enough to serve one position in town government. With a state grant, we are currently working on a study for the feasibility of creating a regional combined public dispatch safety dispatch system with seven of our surrounding communities. We will continue to apply for grants to sustain our community. Tonight, we will vote on expanded capacity for regional affordable housing. Our two school systems have achieved success with the G4 process, and that is ongoing. Our efforts to make advances in reducing our reliance on energy, a 20% increase in the next 5 years, have been very active and successful. As a matter of fact, we were one of the first communities in the state of Massachusetts to be awarded green community status, which has allowed us to receive grants of more than $175,000 for energy-saving efficiencies. We've been working on steps to protect our multi-million-dollar investment in our special infrastructure, particularly our town and school buildings. The Sudbury Public Schools was extremely successful in getting a grant to offset one-third of the cost of repairing and making efficient roof repairs, boilers, and windows at Noyes School. We'll continue. It's a great, great program. It was fantastic. We did. This year, Sudbury Public Schools in town are moving forward a request to create a new shared facilities department, so that we can begin the planning for the systematic maintenance and upgrading of our building so they will last for many decades to come. This effort will also save the town money, as combining our efforts to maintain our municipal and school buildings will result in less duplication and savings on bulk purchasing. While at the same time, we're working on keeping seniors in need in town. In January this year, the town passed the Senior Tax Relief Program, which was unanimously supported by this hall. This week at the State House, there will be a public hearing on the program, and we hope people will attend and support this great program to keep seniors in town. And finally, we are ready to begin the actual work of designing a wastewater treatment system so that we can protect our valuable drinking water supply and at the same time sustain and hopefully grow our commercial district. Article 20, other than the LS need for extra funding this year to cover the extraordinary educational expenses, is one of the more important articles on the warrant. It will set the stage for the future Sudbury, both in terms of our high level of protection of our water supply, but our long-term goal to reduce reliance on property taxes. These are the goals which the town has articulated over and over again. They are universal, and they affect every one of us, young and old, commercial and residential. It's very important that we get this in place. For these reasons, we need the town to take the lead on this project. And some in town think this will unfairly benefit the business community only, and I disagree very strongly. As I said before, there are two primary reasons for supporting the sewering Route 20. One is to protect our water supply, and one is for tax relief. We will partner with the business community in this project. They cannot do it by themselves. If Article 20 passes, we'll be making decisions on who pays for the system over the next 2 years as we go through the design process. There are many more components of this project that we need to work on, and very complex decisions need to be made over the next couple of years. My desire for going forward is us to come together as a community and work collaboratively in ways to find cost savings and additional revenue so Sudbury will continue to be the incredible sense of place it is. As the economic downturn ends, Sudbury will emerge as a stronger and a better position to face the future. We seize these opportunities today. And finally, our community was stunned by the loss of First Lieutenant Milley, and who was killed in action November 30th, 2010, in Afghanistan, defending our country. With this tragedy, our entire community came together to honor Scott and his family. The overwhelming response of his return to this town sent an incredible message of love, sense of loss, and caring, not only to Scott's family, but to friends, but to each of us as a community. Indeed, that showed us what a community is all about. In honor of Scott and all the military men and women who serve to protect our country each and every day, and to recognize their families, the Board of Selectmen has declared the month of May as Military Appreciation Month for the community of Sudbury. To start the month off, we dedicated a special military album to memory of Scott Milley. On Sunday, at least 30 to 40 people attended this heartfelt dedication ceremony. Since January, several soldiers have returned home and have honored them with banners and proclamations declaring a special day of honor. In just a few weeks, we'll have another veteran returning from Kuwait. The patriotism and support shown by all of you is something we can all be proud of. And I would ask us just to have a moment of silence to remember the families and the men of the United States military who are in harm's way. And finally, heartfelt thanks for a community who really showed what a community is about. Thank you.
If you have an empty seat beside you or nearby you, please raise your hand. We have lots of people standing on the sidelines. I'm going to ask you all to take a seat before the fire chief comes up here and reprimands me. Please continue to raise your hands if there are seats near you. Thank you very much. Lots of seats up front here. I understand that the Finance Committee will wait until the budget Article 4 to make its statement on the town's financial condition. I'm going to move on to the consent calendar, which is on pages Roman numeral 3 and 4 at the beginning of the warrant. I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. If any voter has doubt about passing any motions or wishes an explanation of any subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and say the word hold in a loud, clear voice when that number is called. I will then inquire of the voter as to whether the request is a hold for a question or for debate. If the purpose of the request was merely to ask a question, an attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer will be made. And if that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar, absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of that request was to hold the article for debate, that article will be immediately removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant to be brought up and debated and voted on the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove matters from the consent calendar. It is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme, not that of town officials who put together the consent calendar. Having said that, it is hoped that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In the past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and, when reached in the normal course, were passed unanimously without debate, thus indicating that the initial removal request was perhaps not fully considered before being exercised. So, again, if you look on page 4 of your Roman numeral 4 of your warrant, I'm going to go through those numbers one at a time. If you have a question or you want to debate, stand and say hold when I come to that number. Article 10. I hear no one. Article 11. Article 12. Is that for question or debate, sir? Go right ahead. Hang on. Can you give him a mic, please? Can you repeat your name and address and your question?
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road.
A little closer to the mic.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road.
Is that mic on? It is. If you didn't move it, it's on already. Hold it very close to you.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. First of all, I'm interested in this article because it's $1 million, which I consider to be a reasonable sum of money. Secondly, it refers to Mass general law, and I took a look at the Massachusetts general law, and that general law states that the board department or officer having charge of each revolving fund shall report to the annual town meeting or to the city council and the board of selectmen, et cetera, et cetera. I'll skip some of the words. Expenditures for each revolving fund under its control for the prior fiscal year and for the current fiscal year through December 31st, or such later date as a town meeting or city council may, by vote, determine, and the amount of any increases in spending authority granted during the prior and current fiscal years, together with such information as the town meeting or city council, by vote, may require. I'd just like to know that that process has happened because I don't know where that information is.
Who's going to, someone from the school or someone from the town manager's office care to answer that question?
Then I'd like to hold it for debate.
Hang on one second, please. Maureen, do we have someone who can answer that question?
I'd like to confer with my staff.
Go right ahead.
The town accountant informs me it's reported annually on the recapitulation sheet that's filed with the Department of Revenue.
Did you hear that?
I heard that, and that's made available to the public.
Barbara, is that available to the public? Can folks go online either in the Sudbury website or the DOR website and find out that information? The answer is yes.
Well, then, we can't do it tonight, and the statute says at the town meeting. I think I'd like to see some of this data available for the town meeting.
Does it say the town meeting or the Board of Selectmen or both? In the statute. Is it an or an and?
It is. Let's see. Shall report to the annual town meeting or to the city council and the board of selectmen, the mayor of a city or city manager in a Plan E city. I think they're just describing the different forms of government. Since we're town meeting, my assumption was it should be reported at the town meeting.
Paul. Town council has opined that giving the information to the Board of Selectmen meets the requirement of the statute. If you'd like something else, you can ask the selectmen to do that or the town accountant.
I guess then I'd like the town selectmen to confirm that they've reviewed this information and it's all appropriate.
So you want to know if the town accountant has reported that information to the selectmen's office?
I would like to know if it's been reported to the selectmen and the selectmen have determined that the information was gathered and reported correctly.
Fine. Maureen, can you answer that question, or Barbara is going to answer it?
We don't go through that official process of submitting it directly to the board. It's part of the tax rate setting process, but it's not specifically pulled out and given to the Board of Selectmen at this time. I think it's something we probably could include in the town report or in, you know, something along that, because that's where the normal reporting mechanism is.
Well, I looked in the town report, and I didn't see it in the town report either.
Let's see if we can get something done from now on. Is that okay? So excuse me, Maureen, can we have that in the town report henceforth?
That was my suggestion.
Very good. And the selectmen have agreed to that? That's okay with you guys? Great. Are we all set, Dan? I can't go backwards. I can only go forwards.
Well, is there some reason? I mean, town meeting is going to go on for 3 days. Is there some reason the information can't be presented? It's $1 million worth of revolving funds. It seems to increase on an annual basis. It never goes down.
Being informed, we can certainly, and we do have the report, put the prior years on, but we wouldn't have the current year because we're proposing those now. That the report is here is for the current year request.
So then we're not in compliance. We don't have it up to December 31st of the current year.
It hasn't occurred yet for this year, but we could certainly do last year's.
Well, the law says for the prior fiscal year and for the current fiscal year through December 31st.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to look at, because we don't separate things and do them on a calendar year basis. They're typically done on the fiscal year basis, but we can certainly get that out, put it on the website for the past year.
Then I think I'd like to hold it for debate.
That's fine. Article 13. And can you get a mic and tell us whether it's a question?
No debate, Mr. Moderator. Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. I'd like to hold it for debate.
No problem. Article 14. Okay. Article 15.
Same thing, Mr. Moderator. Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. I'd like to hold it for debate.
Thank you. Article 25. Hang on.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. It's a question, Mr. Moderator, but a rather broad one. The selectmen are proposing to abolish a committee that's 40-something years old and which they didn't create. And the sum total of the explanation for it is that they plan to take a different direction in the future. And included in the explanation is nothing about whether the current committee is in favor of this or not. And as I said, since it's a committee that they didn't form, it was formed by petition of the town, then I think that we need more of an explanation than the couple of paragraphs in the warrant provide.
Okay. Do we have an answer for that question?
There is information to address all of that in the presentation that has been developed on this question.
I'm sorry. I was had a reading something. Can you repeat that?
I said there is information to address that in the presentation we were planning to make if it wasn't on the consent calendar. So I don't know if you'd want us to, it's a very brief amount of information. We could certainly give that now.
Do we have it available now as opposed to waiting for Article 25?
Mm-hmm. Selectman Hardy was going to address that. Do you have that information? Let me see if I have it.
Article 25, Dissolved Permanent Landscape Committee. This committee was established under a petition article for the purpose of making recommendations for preserving and safeguarding public shade trees within the town and for suitable planting schemes on town-owned property, including areas around buildings. Currently, the designation of 32 scenic roads under Article 8B of the town bylaws, as well as Massachusetts General Law Chapter 87, provides for the safeguarding of public shade trees while protecting public safety through procedures requiring action of the planning board and the tree warden. The town also recognizes its volunteers and committees who have special knowledge of appropriate plantings for town-owned buildings and who have been influential in developing those plantings with little or no cost to the town. It is the intent of the Board of Selectmen to address landscape matters by other means rather than use of a specific committee for that purpose. The Board wishes to thank those who have served over the years on the Permanent Landscape Committee. The Board unanimously supports this article.
Mr. Coe, do you wish to debate or ask a further question?
Mr. Moderator, there's nothing wrong with my eyesight, and I have read what stated in the warrant, and that is what Mr. Hardy read. Hold this for debate.
Okay. Article 34. Okay. Mr. Drabinski, would you kindly move to take Articles 10, 11, 14, and 34 out of order and consider them together at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Moderator. So moved. The words of the moderator.
What you see in the view graph is not correct. I'm going to repeat the motion. Move to take Articles 10, 11, 14, and 34. That's four articles. 10, 11, 14, and 34. That's what the motion is. Does that receive a second? Thank you. All those in favor? The Finance Committee have any comment? No? Board of Selectmen have any comment? All those in favor of keeping this consent calendar signify by raising your cards? Yes. No. Do not look at the... Can you shut off the view graph, please? It's 10, 11, 14, and 34. 10, 11, 14, and 34. Okay, we got it. It's on the view graph. Selectmen are all set. The Finance Committee are all set. All those in favor of the motion as appeared in the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. I see no one in opposition. It's unanimous. Mr. Drabinski, would you move in the words of the consent calendar motions as printed on page Roman numeral 4 in the warrant for the following articles? Believe it or not, 10, 11, 14, and 34.
Thank you, Ms. Morrow. Move in the words of the moderator.
Is there a second? Thank you. Finance Committee or Selectmen wish to speak? All those in favor signify by anybody else wish to speak? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's unanimous. So it's those four articles that will be on the consent calendar. And now we will move on to Article 2. Yep. Maureen Valente, town manager, will make the motion. Before you do, Maureen, if you have any seats still available next to you, please raise your hand. We have more people over there. Can you all come in? You're not allowed to stand over there. Can you come and take seats next to those who are raising their hands? Plenty of extra seats here. Please raise your hands. People who are standing must sit down now. If the police officers can see anybody in the hallways looking for seats or anyone in here looking for seats, send them over here. Anyone raising their hand, please continue to raise your hands. Thank you so much. Maureen, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to amend the votes taken under Article 4, FY11 operating budget of the 2010 annual town meeting by adding to or deleting from the items thereunder, by transfer between or among accounts, or by transfer from available funds as follows. Transfer from 900, townwide operating and transfer, $41,985 to 400, public works, all to be allocated to snow and ice expenditures. Transfer from 900, unclassified benefits, $50,000 to 400, public works, to be allocated to snow and ice expenditures, and $50,000 to 300, Sudbury Public Schools, to be allocated to snow and ice.
Can I receive a second? It does. Maureen Valente for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Massachusetts state law allows us to deficit spend for snow and ice with affirmative approval of the FinCom. I think everyone remembers this winter. It was quite a winter with back-to-back-to-back storms that we were dealing with. We ended up with a snow and ice deficit at this point that's approximately $295,000 beyond what was appropriated. I think you remember the last few years I've been bringing to you motions to start reallocating money. We would look in other accounts and see what we could do to begin putting more funds to that. Although we can deficit spend within the fiscal year, we still have to address that deficit. For this particular one, the first amount of money, which is $41,985, which we'd like to move towards a snow and ice deficit, comes from a line item that was voted last year. It was $51,985 was put into a salary contingency reserve fund. The town still had collective bargaining going on and a number of potential labor situations. So far, we've managed to settle all of those without needing any money from that account. We would still like to keep $10,000 in that account just to be sure till the end of the fiscal year, but that has freed up $41,985 that we would respectfully request you approve transferring towards snow and ice. For the second one, from unclassified benefits, we have been very successful in controlling the costs of the health insurance with the employees based upon the agreements that they entered into with us, plus favorable vacancies held open, things like that, that's allowed us to sort of have a little bit more money in that line item. $100,000 we project will be available by the for this year. We would like to put half of that, $50,000, towards the town's snow and ice deficit. The other is the Sudbury Public Schools ended up expending significant dollars to get snow off of the roof of the buildings, which they had not planned for and was an unexpected cost for them. So this is sharing in those savings from the employee benefits. We're recommending allocating it that way to help them with their unexpected snow and ice costs and with the town's. Thank you.
The Finance Committee have an opinion?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
And the Selectmen want to speak any further to this?
No, Mr. Moderator, we unanimously support.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 2? Signify by raising your card. Yes, sir.
Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. I'd like to know whether or not the town has, for the fiscal 2012 budget that we have coming up, allocated more funds for snow removal for fiscal 2012 so that we won't have to be scrambling around again next year.
We've allocated a little bit more, $10,000. The law is sort of funny on the snow and ice deficit. If you budget at least what you budget and appropriated the year before, you were allowed to deficit spend. So if we increase this spending significantly, and then we don't need it, the money just sits there. We can't use it for anything else. And now we've created a new high bar for the next few years that we have to go back to. Snow and ice is funny. Some years we'll have a very mild year, and we can easily cover it within the appropriation we've set. And some years it has been extraordinary. Our recommendation at this point is to keep the money about where it's at. We do put a couple $100,000 in a reserve fund. So, if, as I said, we started off with a $295,000 deficit. Here we're finding a way for about $90,000 of that, and we have planned already in the reserve fund extra money that can help with that balance. But if we lock it into this particular line item, we can't use it for anything else. If we keep it in the reserve fund, we have it for all sorts of unexpected emergencies, and it could be very useful in a year where we don't have a particularly bad winter. So I think between the budgeting we do, we've been able to come pretty close every year, and we are able to find the other places to move it. And just feel strongly we're better off in the big picture handling it this way.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? I see no other hands. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? I see no one opposed. It's a unanimous vote. We'll now move on to Article 3. Mr. O'Brien, are you making the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen moves to indefinitely postpone as we are not placing any money this year.
Whoa. You moved to indefinitely postpone. Does
Sorry,
that receive
Moderator.
A second? It does. Mr. O'Brien.
My apologies, Mr. Moderator. We are not putting any money into the stabilization fund. Therefore, there is nothing to vote on.
Finance Committee wish to speak?
Finance Committee supports IPing this article.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak? I see no one. All those in favor of Article 3 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? I see no one opposed. It's a unanimous vote. We will now move on to Article 4, the budget. Was this one of those on the consent calendar? Let us review our procedure. It's also, if I'm not making any sense, this is also written in the warrant, in the very front of your warrant in the Roman numerals. The tradition in Sudbury is to first take a motion from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would be limited to the amount which would be required to finance the Finance Committee's budget proposal. This limiting motion will seek a vote of the hall as to the overall upper limit of the budget. A vote in favor of the motion will not mean that town meeting has voted for a particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the warrant, but it will establish the upper limit of our budget for fiscal year 2012. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, then the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line items 100 through 1,000 in the handout that you received and ask if anyone has a motion to amend. If you are all at all not certain of our budget procedure, again, please read the bottom third of Roman numeral page 2 and the top of Roman numeral page 3 in the warrant. Okay. So let's see the motion. Okay. Can we have a motion from the Finance Committee?
Move that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 12 budget override budget not exceed the sum of $79,652,861.
Okay. The wording on the view is that receive a second. It does. The wording on the view graph is correct. What you have in the handout, which is this form here, is slightly different than what you're about to see on the view graph. The view graph is just a simplified version of the handout. So, for example, in your handout, the last column is marked difference on the last column on the right. The next to last column is marked override. That's the column that's in the limiting motion. That bottom line in that column is $79,652,861. So that's the column the limiting motion is talking about, just to give you context. And just for your information, the next column over, marked non-override, the third column from the right, with the total is $79,099,861, or $553,000 less than what I just read you, is the non-override column. Anybody have any questions about that? Okay. As I told you at the beginning of the meeting, the Finance Committee wishes to make its state of the town finances. And now would be a good time to do that. The chairman is Jim Rayo. At the same time that Mr. Rayo gives us the Finance Committee statement of the town financial condition, he will be talking about the limiting motion and the subsequent main motion on the budget. I'll remind the hall that this presentation is not subject to the 10-minute rule.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. My name is Jim Rayo, Chair of the Sudbury Finance Committee. Before getting into the main budget-related items, I'd like to briefly remind town meeting of the role of the Finance Committee. We are responsible for reviewing budgets for the town and schools and making recommendations to the Board of Selectmen and to the taxpayers at town meeting. In this role, we have no authority to make spending decisions, as that is the responsibility of our various elected bodies. Rather, our role is to examine those budgets on your behalf and make independent, informed recommendations regarding the budget and other financial issues. We are residents, taxpayers, and volunteers. Our backgrounds are varied, as we have five committee members with children in the school system, both the K-8 system and the high school, and other committee members whose children have already gone through our school systems. We have retirees, seniors, and business professionals. We also have a blend of experienced and new, as three members, including myself, have been on the committee for less than 3 years. Hopefully that varied background helps us to stimulate debate, maintain an open mind, and in the end reach a consensus that incorporates all viewpoints. Now on to the budget. First, I'd like to review changes in our budget assumptions as compared to what was published in the warrant and that are contained in the handout that you received this evening. As you recall, a year ago, we voted to push back the start of town meeting in order to allow for more time to obtain better estimates for future revenues, in particular, the likely level of state aid. At that time, the data in the warrant was finalized back in March, our consensus expectation was for a 5% reduction in state aid heading into fiscal 2012. Fortunately, that expectation improved on April 14th when the House published their budget estimates, which results in only a 2% reduction in state aid. As you can see, the House proposal results in approximately $149,000 of additional revenue for the Sudbury Public Schools in the town and $138,000 of additional revenue for the high school, of which approximately $117,000 flows through to Sudbury based on the percentage split with Lincoln. Given that the House tends to present the most conservative budget proposal and based on input from our legislators, we've incorporated these increases into the non-override budget. The table on this slide shows the change in projected receipts as compared to the warrant. Okay. If we take a slightly different view of the budget, we can see how the improved revenue picture translates into the operating budgets for each cost center. As highlighted on this slide, the allowable non-override budget growth for each cost center has increased from the 1.87% growth assumed in the warrant. These new revenue estimates result in growth of 2.4% for Lincoln Sudbury and 2.2% for SPS in the town, respectively. In addition, expectations for circuit breaker funding, which is a form of cost reimbursement from the state for mandated special education programs, has also improved. The higher circuit breaker estimates collectively free up more than $500,000 of non-override budget spending for our schools. So with that background, let's move on to the non-override budget. The Finance Committee is required by law to recommend a non-override budget. For fiscal 2012, we are recommending a non-override budget of approximately $80.9 million, which includes the $79.1 million for the main budget on the previous slides, as well as funding for capital and other items. As the changes I mentioned earlier have to do with improved estimates from the state, the non-override tax impact discussed in the warrant remains unchanged, namely that the non-override budget represents a tax increase of approximately 2.37%, or $255.54 on the average assessed home value of $628,000. Including new growth in commercial property taxes, the non-override budget results in a total tax increase of approximately $1.6 million. With that backdrop, and knowing that each of the cost centers will discuss what the impact of these and other changes mean to their budgets, I want to give you a brief overview of what some of these broader changes mean as compared to what you've previously seen in the warrant. So in your warrant, there was discussion of a potential override of approximately $370,000 for Sudbury Public Schools and $80,000 to the town operating budget. In addition, there was $500,000 to Lincoln Sudbury High School. These funds were sought out to cover the gap in shortfalls from their level service budget. Shortfalls that, in the case of LS and SPS, would result in headcount reductions. There was also a total of $50,000 for the town that was contemplated as an addition to the capital budget. Fortunately for SPS, through a combination of improved state aid revenues, circuit breaker, and other initiatives that they will discuss further, they can fund their requested needs within the constraints of a non-override budget. The same is true for the town. This positive outcome is the result of several factors beyond just the improved revenue outlook. First, in the case of Sudbury Public Schools, they are benefiting from additional cost savings measures and other favorable changes realized since the warrant was published. Second, for both SPS and the town, they are realizing the continued benefits of the collective bargaining agreements reached with employee associations approximately 2 years ago. Benefits which are being realized in several ways, the most material of which has come in the form of lower annual growth in health care expenditures as compared to prior contracts. To be sure, the concessions the union serving SPS and the town agreed to have had a meaningful impact. The most important is that we are able to keep K-8 teachers in the classroom, police on patrol, and firefighters on call, all within the constraints of a non-override budget. In terms of the high school, while the favorable changes to state aid and circuit breaker funding have helped to reduce the gap by approximately $400,000, a gap of roughly 790K still remains, as the original funding gap they started with was much larger at approximately $1.2 million. In the warrant, the Finance Committee presented certain parameters for an override budget for the high school, parameters that included targeted savings that we believe could be realized by making changes to the current health insurance plans offered by the high school. So why make an override conditional? Despite what some have suggested, it was not proposed to divert attention from the issue of reduced services. Quite the contrary, it was an attempt to create meaningful, sustainable long-term savings that could be reinvested in the classroom. Moreover, the burden of that investment was to be borne by both taxpayers and school employees, as both would share in the burden of helping to bridge the gap in fiscal 2012. Why focus on health care? Unlike the town and SPS, LS has seen significant rise in health care costs the past several years, despite changes made to the collective bargaining agreements negotiated 2 years ago. Health care benefits in FY12 are expected to grow by more than 14%, or $400,000 from approximately $2.8 million to $3.2 million. This growth comes on top of nearly 19% increase from FY10 to FY11. By contrast, health care costs at SPS are increasing by only 1.8%, or $85,000 from FY11 to FY12. To be clear, other factors beyond their contracts helped to contribute to the favorable result for SPS in FY12. But the fact remains that the principal driver is still changes agreed to nearly 2 years ago. So while we acknowledge that the current CBA is an improvement from prior LS contracts, we do believe there is still significant room for improvement. And while we had hoped some of those changes could have been implemented for FY12, the LS School Committee has communicated to us that there will be no changes to the current CBA forthcoming. While we understand the context for this result, it is nevertheless still disappointing, especially in light of the fact that a non-override budget will mean layoffs at the high school. After careful review and in consultation with the Finance Committee, the Board of Selectmen has proposed an operating override of $653,000. At the request of the LS School Committee, the override includes an incremental $553,000 for LS, and an additional $100,000 has been proposed as an increase to the capital budget, specifically for the town. The override budget represents a tax increase of approximately 3.34%, or $358, on the average assessed home value of $628,000. This represents an incremental tax increase of approximately 103.59%, over the non-override amount, including new growth and commercial property taxes. The override budget results in a total increase in taxes of approximately $2.3 million. The incremental funding provided to LS by the override reduces the level services shortfall at the high school to a more manageable $137K. The override for LS represents an incremental tax increase of approximately $87.73 on top of, on the average assessed home value. Most importantly, with this funding, LS will be able to maintain all of their current staffing. Somewhat of concern to the Finance Committee is the disproportionate growth rate that results from the override for the high school. In the past, we have insisted that each cost center get the same percentage budget increases absent major changes in circumstances. While the significant growth in special education costs certainly qualifies a major change, the reality is that there are other factors, namely health care, that are also helping to drive the increased funding requirements in the LS budget. And we remain concerned about any unintended message this might provide for future collective bargaining efforts. To be clear, changes must be made in the future. Otherwise, we will be back in this unsustainable budget position next year and the year after that. Healthcare changes are not about reducing employee benefits. These changes are about freeing up spending to preserve valuable teaching positions. And briefly for the town, the incremental capital budget of $100,000 represents an incremental tax increase of $15.86 on the average assessed home value. This additional funding would allow them to lease two sidewalk plows as opposed to the one snowplow originally contemplated in the warrant. To conclude, the key override question for Sudbury taxpayers is whether you are willing to provide the additional funds needed to maintain current staffing levels at LS, given the constraints of higher special ed costs and healthcare-related expenses. For Article 4, the main operating budget, the Finance Committee is recommending a non-override budget of $79,099,861 and recommending an override budget of $79,652,861. Normally, I would not give much detail about the discussion we had, but given that it came tonight and frankly was very much a heated discussion, I thought it was important to share with you the results of that vote. While we did vote in favor, the results of that vote were favored by a vote of 5-4. In the end, the five members of the committee who voted for this were critically concerned with the impact to the classroom the failure of an override would cause. One thing to note from the dissenting opinion is that many would have been much more comfortable had the override been a smaller amount. For Article 5, the capital budget, the Finance Committee is recommending a non-override budget of $538,947 and recommending an override budget of $638,947. The committee would like to note that in general, we feel that over the past several years, capital has been an area that needs to have increased focus both for the town and the schools. So with that, I say thank you. And Alex, if you're still up watching this, you should have been in bed 15 minutes ago.
We will now hear from the schools and the town departments and then the selectmen with respect to their individual budgets before the general discussion by the hall. We first call upon John Brackett, superintendent of K through 8.
Good evening. We are presenting to you tonight a non-override budget that totals $35.4 million, or about a 2.17% increase over FY11. Our operating budget included in that is $28.7 million and is up only 1.88% again over this year. The total benefit costs, as you can see, are $6.7 million, a 3.45% increase over this fiscal year. That is one of the smallest increases in benefits that we've seen in many, many years. And it's also interesting to note that some of that number is due to unemployment benefits that we have paid due to recent layoffs. There are benefits of a May town meeting besides allowing me to watch the NCAA men's basketball finals on the first Monday of April. And so In addition to that, we're presenting a very different budget than we were looking at, as you've heard, at the beginning of the last month. A number of key issues have been clarified and several strategic decisions have been finalized. First, as you know, Chapter 70 came in to the town and SPS of about $148,000, of which $97,000 came to our budget. Circuit breaker, again, better than the initial projection by almost $250,000. Third, we have gone out to bid to contract out for our food service program. That will bring us savings of nearly $97,000 that we can use in our budget for this upcoming year. We revised our facility utilization fee policy that will generate about $60,000 that had not otherwise been budgeted for. And we've become aware of several retirements, which will provide some flexibility in salary differential going forward. This has allowed us, within a budget that is growing less than 2.5%, to keep our classroom teacher staffing for this at this year's level, and that includes the two positions that we added after the school year started with the benefit of the stimulus money. This maintains class sizes that, with very few exceptions, is within our guidelines. We're able to restore the middle school house administrator that was lost in last year's cuts. We're able to restore a modest amount to our previously cut technology budget. We're able to provide administrative support to Haynes School, to add a technician to our current two-person technology department, and we're able to provide our 50% share of the very important district and town facilities director, which will help us to protect our investment in our facilities as well as bring about savings and efficiencies that will support our sustainability efforts. Given the economy and the limited state support, we are presenting a budget that provides a level service comparable to this year and addresses a small number of critical needs that will help us to continue to improve. It does not address all of our needs. We will have to continue to seek creative methods and even more operational efficiencies in order to meet our unwavering vision of excellence. One logical question that you may have is, how can you do this with only a 2.17% budget increase? I'd like to say it was because of the superintendent. But in reality, our program and staffing has been cut two out of the last 3 years. This prior pain means that we started with a very constrained budget. Two, our employees stepped up in FY10 and said they wanted to be part of the solution. In short, their actions in working with our school committee saved jobs. Our benefit plan was changed, the co-pays increased, the employees are paying more of their premium, raises were constrained, step increases were eliminated in 1 year, and new employees pay even a larger percentage of their benefits than do our current employees. Three, we've made some difficult decisions that we believe were right but not necessarily easy. Contracting food service, adding charges for our use of our facilities, bringing even greater efficiencies to our busing program, and reaping the benefits of an aggressive energy conservation program. And four, some just plain luck. In summary, and I'm not biased, the SPS school committee, leadership team, and staff have demonstrated sound financial planning and management. We understand the economic conditions and continue to work towards sustainability in program and level of service, while remembering that our kids can't put their education on hold until the economy improves. While 2.17 is a very constrained budget growth, we will make it work. If it is anything less, we would be presenting a very different picture, one with cuts and layoffs for the third time in 4 years, and with class sizes similar to what we started this school year with, that only the infusion of stimulus money allowed us to be relieved. While we are not requesting an override this year, we at SPS are very cognizant of. And as an educator who is committed to a high-quality education for all students, I am concerned with the detrimental impact on the educational system in our town that the non-override budget presents for our high school students. I ask you to give that serious consideration and the implications if an override is not successful. In closing, on behalf of the Sudbury Public Schools School Committee and all members of our staff, I thank you for your support, first for the Noyes School Project, which was boilers, roof, and windows, that you approved earlier this year. I also want to personally thank each of you for your support and friendship during my 8 years and the opportunity and honor to serve Sudbury and our students. And while there are many challenges ahead, I know that people of goodwill working collaboratively with respect are very capable of turning those challenges into opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Scott Carpenter, Superintendent, Mark Collins, the Chairman of the LS Regional School Committee.
Thank you. I'm here to introduce Scott, who will make the budget presentation. In light of the remarks that were presented by the FinCom, I thought it appropriate to outline several facts before Scott speaks. One, it is true that the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee is seeking an override in the amount of $553,000 for the town of Sudbury. That represents a total increase in our budget of $652,000, $99,000 of which would be funded by the town of Lincoln. The reason for that request is solely for the increase in out-of-district special education costs that are received at Lincoln Sudbury in fiscal 12. There has been reference to increases in health care obligations at Lincoln Sudbury. Let me tell you that Lincoln Sudbury has worked diligently over the course of my 8 years on the committee and previously to address rising costs for health insurance. Lincoln Sudbury has done that several ways. First, we have increased our percentage contribution for employees for their health insurance from 25% to 30% in our last collective bargaining agreement. That is higher than the standard across the state. It's higher than the Group Insurance Commission level, and it's higher significantly than other agreements locally and regionally. Lincoln Sudbury, through its efforts on health insurance over the course of at least those last 8 years, has significantly benefited the taxpayers in Sudbury and Lincoln, of which I am one. Let me also report that in our collective bargaining agreement, we included provisions that seek to limit increases going forward in the last year of our agreement. Remember, we increased our employee contribution from 25% to 30% in the first year. So that benefit inures to the community, both communities, all 3 years of the agreement. Additionally, we have incentive provisions within our agreement that have also saved us money. Those provisions have encouraged employees to move to less expensive health insurance plans, and those provisions have been successful. We have seen over the course of the last 3 weeks during the open enrollment period, 37 employees out of our total employee count of 177 move to so-called rate savers. Those rate savers save the community significant amounts of money. That's the result of voluntary effort on the part of the Lincoln-Sudbury Teachers Association and the rest of the employees at Lincoln-Sudbury. Finally, I would ask you to remember that in the course of the last collective bargaining agreement, the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee and the Lincoln-Sudbury Teachers Association negotiated an agreement that was sound and that saved the community $1.9 million, both communities, $1.9 million over the course of the three-year agreement based on the decline in growth. If you look at where the agreement provisions were heading before. So let me ask you, as I introduce Scott, to consider the fact that the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee has worked diligently to provide savings in health insurance. We have realized those savings. Unfortunately, this year, we have a growth rate that is unpleasant, and we're working to limit that. Nevertheless, we have provided savings over the course of not just the last 3 years, but over the course of the last 8 years that I've been on that committee. So with that, I introduce Scott Carpenter, and I thank you for your consideration.
Mr. Moderator, I'd like to first acknowledge Bern Webb, who's not with us tonight, for her service on the Lincoln-Sudbury School Committee. I first met Bern, it seems ages ago, wearing a hard hat. Bern was chairing the first Jamaica Jamming Committee to run a senior safe night here in this school, and she's been involved prior to that and has been involved since with the high school, and I appreciate her years of service. And I also welcome Elena Kalifkas to join the school committee after town meeting. So moving forward here, I'm remote impaired again this year, it seems. Ultimately, many of us, including my wife and I, chose to move to Sudbury because of the quality of the schools. Lincoln-Sudbury benefits immensely by having parent communities that value education and instills this in their children. We also have outstanding feeder districts that set the foundation upon which students soar at LS. We offer both breadth and depth to our curriculum. Our teachers develop engaging courses and produce well-rounded graduates prepared for the best colleges. We also pride ourselves on the connections fostered between staff and students. It is these connections that make Lincoln-Sudbury the special school it is. For about half of our students, high school sports is an important part of their learning and development. LS offers a variety of sports opportunities, and we're consistently amongst the schools with the best winning percentages in all of Massachusetts. But it's not about the wins, and our teams consistently demonstrate exemplary conduct both on the field of play and off. The diversity of our extracurricular opportunities spans far beyond sports. Simply put, Lincoln-Sudbury has a niche to meet every student's interest, and this happens within a school climate focused on caring relationships and respect for differences. In a no-override budget, salaries and benefits represent roughly 80% of the overall cost of running the high school. In a no-override budget, the total salary increase for STEPS and COLA will be 0.47%. As Mark mentioned, out-of-district placements are a big factor in this year's budget, including tuition and transportation to these placements. The out-of-district budget represents 12.4% of the total budget, and this category is increasing by 22.4% in FY12. This is the single largest percentage increase in any budget category. All other budget categories combined, including utilities, daily school bus transportation, department budgets, and others, make up only 8% of the total budget. Combined, those other components, these 8%, are going down by 21.25% in a no override budget. As I mentioned, the single largest increase in any budget category happens in our out-of-district expenses. By law, we must provide a free, appropriate education to all. LS has many programs to serve most needs. In fact, each year, these programs, particularly our REACH program here at the high school, take back into the district several students that were previously outplaced during their K-8 years. Next year is unusual and unprecedented. We have many students moving up from our K-8 feeder schools needing outside services, and we have a number of LS students this year who, for a variety of reasons, needed to be outplaced. The net result is 18 out-of-district students coming onto the high school's roster, but only 3 tuitions leaving it. This creates a $652,000 increase in the out-of-district costs. And this is something that the high school can't buffer without the loss of teachers, counselors, and support staff. Without this unprecedented increase, Lincoln Sudbury could have managed a no-override budget without the loss of staffing. As we entered the budget season, state aid was expected to be cut by 5%, and we conservatively developed a budget that is printed in the town board based on this 5% cut. When state aid was ultimately level funded by the legislature, this added an additional $138,000 to support the high school. Despite level funding of state aid, there's still going to be a pronounced gap between our level staff and no override budgets. The budget printed in the town ward also conservatively predicted circuit breaker to be reimbursed at 40%. A recent legislative resolution has this being reimbursed at 65%. And has helped close the gap by another $277,000. Lincoln Sudbury can belt tighten in a number of areas, and we will. And these don't involve staff layoff, but we can only do this to a tune of about $170,000. And this won't be enough to close the funding gap. Without an override, we will need to cut 8.36 FTEs, including teachers, counselors, and support staff. An additional 2.25 FTEs will be removed from the budget and supported by grants. And the Federal Education Jobs Grant, which started this year, is supporting some of these positions, and this grant will end 1 year out. The size of the LS staff is significantly smaller today than it was in 2008, yet we're serving the same number of students. The reduction to the LS staffing began in FY9, and has had a cumulative impact on our staffing. This has resulted in increased class sizes, decreased curriculum options, and limited student supports at the high school. RF funds that became available in FY10 were also accessible in FY11. These have helped buffer LF staff reductions that would have happened if these federal dollars meant to stimulate the economy weren't there. Our money helped the high school make it through the past 2 tough budget years, but this money is no longer available, and the impact is being felt in FY12. In a no-override scenario, we will have lost 21.71 FTEs since the 2007-2008 academic year. This translates into roughly 10% of our staff. So what does a no-override budget look like next year? There would be 3.83 fewer teachers, and one of our full-time guidance counselors would be reduced to half-time. Without an override, there will also be 4.03 fewer support staff, including much of our academic support center, which provides tutoring for students during the school day. Regardless of the override vote, as I mentioned, LS will be belt-tightening in a number of areas, and these reductions in efficiencies will save the high school roughly $170,000. To limit budget growth in FY12, Lake and Sudbury will also be applying funds left over at the end of this year to preserve our circuit breaker funds. And these can be carried over for 1 year to help offset this unprecedented influx of out-of-district students. The Lincoln Sudbury School Committee has also increased athletic fees for next year, and this will reduce the impact that athletics has on the school's overall budget. Finally, we will also be using some IDEA and federal education jobs funds in FY12 to preserve a few staff positions. The assessment. So the assessment is essentially the bill that the high school submits to each of the towns, and it's based on our enrollment. So Lincoln represents roughly 15% of our enrollment and Sudbury 85% of the enrollment. So the assessment is based is proportionally assigned to each community. The high school's override assessment to the town of Sudbury would be $20,826,000. This is $553,000 more than it would be in a non-override scenario. The school and our students need your support, and I'd encourage you to ponder this. And I also would encourage you to take part in the culture of LS and come back to the auditorium this week, 7:30, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night for the spring theatrical production of Our Town. Thanks.
Maureen Valente, town manager, will speak for the town department's budget.
Thank you and good evening. As the moderator said, I will be addressing the town budget for FY12. As the town manager, I oversee all of the town department's activities and services under the policy direction of the Board of Selectmen, and this is the budget that we will be looking for under a non-override scenario. I'll go through it a couple of ways. These are just straight numbers here. It's comparing it to the FY11 numbers, and you can see it is growing by 2.17%, the same amount that SPS is growing under the way we sort of put the budget together, the two cost centers growing about the same. One thing you might particularly note is the increase in the town offsets, and I'll discuss that in another slide in a moment. You can see that the biggest budgetary growths are under town employee benefits. $312,000 of the $396,000 is for that area. The other major area is in public safety. Looking at our budget a different way by major kind of categories of spending, you can see for personal services, which are the wages and salaries, growing 1.63%. That's higher than what I'd originally presented to the FinCom, and I'll talk about that because of two items that have changed since we're in the warrant. Most of those are falling under that area. And again, you can see the total 2.17% there. And there's the additional $10,000 I mentioned under snow and ice. So what are the changes from the budget in the warrant? All in public safety, $176,000 there has been highlighted that we have added to the public safety cluster. And I will note down below again, the town offsets have gone up by an amount of $121,145. So there is a net increase of $55.33 since the budget was printed in the warrant. So what are those revisions? The first, as Dr. Brackett mentioned, we are looking to move forward with a shared facilities department between SPS and the town. We feel very strongly that the needs of our buildings and our infrastructure, we can't wait any longer to seriously have somebody just focused and responsible on that. We don't have a situation where we have that right now. That's $55,336. That is the amount that would be the town's half share of staffing that department with a professional director, some clerical support, and some expense money in that budget. The others is $121,145. We have added to the fire department. We've been talking about this for a while. We feel we're very close to being able to get up and running, perhaps by the fall of this year, with advanced life support, which we think is a critical service that should be provided by the town fire department. That amount we've estimated would be what it would take to run the new program. It would cover stipends, equipment, tuition, overtime while some of the firefighters are being trained to become paramedics, a medical director from a nearby hospital to provide medical oversight, and other related ALS costs. To pay for that, you do charge more. Your bill is greater when you provide paramedic-level services, and we estimate we will bring in that $121,000 to offset those new costs. So it is a budget-neutral proposal at this point. So though the appropriation goes up, the revenue will come with it to pay for that. Quickly, an overview then of what the FY12 budget does for the town departments. It's almost level services. From the FY11 level, we're shy of that by the equivalent of about $145,000. We reduced $40,000 from streets and roads, $29,000 trees and cemeteries, and $12,000 from parks and grounds. So you can see most of those cuts are slated for the DPW. Some for police in terms of equipment. General government across the board, $2,000 from the library and $3,000 from transfer accounts. Taken together, as I said, $145,000 that we would have otherwise would have liked to have to stay right at level services with FY11. But even within that, there are no layoffs planned. We are able to keep our staffing levels intact under this budget. I just want to recap real briefly, though, that for the past 12 years, what we have seen, for each one of those years, we had a number that we would have needed to get to level services, and we did have to cut. So that was an FY09, $806,000, FY10, $471,000. This year, $260,000. So that's the amount of the cuts that we have been taking across the town departments and town services. That affected staffing reductions. I will just say for FY11, we actually did not cut that .51. We created a field enterprise fund account, and we are charging some of those, the costs of our DPW workers who maintain the fields to that enterprise fund. But those are sort of reductions of what the general fund is supporting. And there's the 3 years of the budget growth the town department has seen. We do so many different things. I think we have over 30 departments, and even within that, many more responsibilities. I've just put this pie chart together to give you a sense of how those dollars fall out. You can see the vast majority are for public safety and public works. And within public safety, police and fire, of course, are the predominant costs there. And that's pretty much where we have been consistently across the years keeping the town dollars. I want to close just with some perspective that we do feel we bring you good value for your dollar. Compare this to many of the peer towns that the town compares itself with. I had at the time of the FinCom compared our spending per capita to other towns, and someone had suggested, you know, maybe it would be more interesting and accurate to look on a per household basis. So we went back and recalculated the numbers by homes that are in each one of these communities. But the outcome was still the same. For your per household cost, for your total municipal expenditures, we are one of the lowest. Hopkinton and Sharon spend a little bit less than us, but the vast majority of towns that we compare ourselves to spend far more per capita for municipal services than we do. In particular, I'll point out for police services, we are at the lowest, and we run very lean on the police budget. DPW as well, we're the lowest among our groups. So that's basically what I wanted to say in terms of the overview of the budget. I just have one closing thought, and I just want to say it on a personal level, what a privilege it's been to work with Dr. Brackett over the past 8 years. He's just a consummate professional. Just an incredible, creative, and inspirational person to work with, and I'm going to miss him tremendously. I look forward to working with our new superintendent, but this is really difficult to say goodbye to John, especially in the budget. In many towns, the schools and the town fight viciously over resources, and it can often be an unpleasant relationship. We have never had that here, and it's just I'm just struck by the relationship that we have had, the professionalism that he has brought, and I'm really going to miss him and wanted to close with that. Thank you, John.
Did the selectmen as a board care to give an opinion, or that's what Maureen was saying, relative to the limiting motion?
Relative to the limiting motion, which is the override budget, Mr. Moderator?
Yes.
The Board of Selectmen supports two in favor, one opposed, and we support the town manager's budget presentation.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion? We're not going to do the line by line until after we finish with the limiting motion. So this is establishing the upper limit that we won't spend more than, which happens to be the override amount of $79,652,861, which is on the view graph in front of you. Anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion? Yes, way in the back. Keep your hand up, please. Thank you.
Mark? Sorry, Mark Libby, for the Patricia Road. I had a question about the limiting motion. What happens if we vote this down?
Then the Finance Committee will make another motion at some number lower than this.
Thank you.
Yep. Excuse me, just to get a complete answer. Has the Finance Committee already voted on what other number if this goes down?
We have not.
Okay. The Finance Committee has yet to make that decision. If this is voted down, we will ask the we'll have to take a brief recess while the Finance Committee decides what number they will agree on as a body. Yes.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Just ask you to drop the other shoe, Mr. Moderator. It is true, isn't it, that there will be another limiting motion for the non-override budget that's independent of this? No?
No.
So
if this passes, that is the limiting motion. We'll then move into the main motion on the budget. It's my understanding the Finance Committee will make a motion that will total this amount broken down into the categories as you see in this handout.
Well, what happens if the limiting motion is passed at this level and then the override doesn't pass?
You'll see some language in the next motion. All the limiting motion says is we will not spend more than this. So if it fails at the town, as most of you might know, on June 7th, we're going to have a town-wide ballot so the entire town can vote on whether or not to have an override. And what you'll see, and so if it fails, if it passes here, the $79,852,861, as you see in the view graph, if it passes now but fails at the townwide election, you will see, so the limiting motion is not affected by that because it says we will not spend more than the override amount. We can spend less, or the non-override amount. You will see language in the next view graph, which you haven't seen yet, which will say, take into account what you're saying. It'll take into account in case this fails at the townwide ballot and passes here.
But that's not, in effect, another limiting motion that,
no,
that makes it...
No, you don't need to make another limiting motion because it just says we will not spend more than. It's the upper limit. It doesn't say how much less than we will spend. The next... motion will do that, but it will have language to take into account on perchance it passes here and fails on June 7th.
Okay.
We will not have to have another town meeting. It will go back to a lower number that you'll see, we'll talk about when we get to the main budget number. Anybody else have any questions or comments, pro or con, or are we ready for a vote? Yes, ma'am, right over there. Could you stand up, please? And we're going to get a mic over to you.
Mara Houston, 578 Peckham Road. With this limiting motion, with this budget, what is the tax increase per average household compared to FY11 complete?
Okay. Does either the Finance Committee, the Town Manager, or the Finance Director have an answer to that? If so, raise your hand. Just raise your hand if you're going to answer the question.
Yes, I will.
The chairman of the Finance Committee momentarily will answer the question for us.
Yes, actually, let me just... So it was on the presentation, but let me get you the exact number. So the total tax increase, assuming this override budget is approved ultimately, would result in a 3.34% increase, or $358, on the average assessed home value of $628,000. And as compared to the non-override budget, is an incremental $103.59 on top of that increase.
So, Jim, so if we pass a non-override budget, it's $103 more than last year?
And if it's $358 more
total
than last year.
Or in addition to the 100?
No.
Inclusive of the 100. Thank you. Anybody else have any questions or comments before we vote? Yes, sir. Stand, please.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. Just a point of clarification. I have trouble with numbers. I understand that this is the limiting override budget. But once we vote this, we then go to each of the cost centers and address those budgets individually. And, in fact, we'll have discussion about the individual budgets that can be beneath this number.
Yes.
Thank you.
What this limited motion will do is mean, and I'm going to explain this again when we get to the main motion, is that if someone on the main motion, as we go through each line item, wants to decrease a line item, that's fine, because it won't exceed this upper limit. If someone wants to increase a line item without decreasing another line item by the same amount, that's not allowed, because we have already set the upper limit. Yes. Please stand, and could the Boy Scout pass the mic down right here? Just pass the mic right down. This is very communal.
Ed Shashua, 328 Goodmans Hill Road. I'd just like a clarification of one of the line items, which is the sole reason for the need for the override, which is the funding for special education needs. That is mandated by law, correct? And therefore cannot be reduced? In which case, if we do decrease the budget to the non-override level, all of those decreases must come from other sources rather than that budget, which it, is that correct?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes. We all here say yes.
The moderator, the school budgets are a bottom line budget. They would have to pay those costs out of the budget that was voted to them. You're correct in saying that they have these are additional costs that they may have incurred, but you're not voting for special education in this, and certainly not in this motion.
But as part of the budget,
can we start off with your first question? Your first question was, is it mandated by the state that we in Sudbury must pay for the special education of students? Is that your first question?
That was my first question, yes.
Terrific. Is the answer yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Next question.
So that number is fixed because of children who are coming into the school system. Therefore, that money will be allocated for those needs out of this override or non-override budget.
So the real question is, if the override budget doesn't pass and we pass a non-override budget, will the LS still have to pay that amount of money to the special ed kids?
That's part of it, yes.
And the answer is? Yes.
Therefore, any deductions that would have to come out of any other line item would come from any other student, but not from the students requiring special needs.
No.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Great. Could you stand up, please? And could you pass the mic back to her?
Mary Ann Thompson, 1800s Run. The $358 amount, does that also include the two snow plows and the... And what was the third thing? The schools, the snow plows? I can't remember what the other one was. Not the sewers.
So it includes the schools, the $100,000 for the snow plows, but not the Article 20 money.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on the limiting motion only? Okay. I don't see any other hands. So all those in favor of the limiting motion as it appears on the screen, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. There's about a dozen negative votes, and all the rest of approximately 400 votes are in favor. Okay, now we will move on to the main budget motion, and we will ask the Finance Committee to make that motion.
That the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column override for fiscal year 2012 as printed in the Finance Committee handout dated May 2, 2011. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers from ambulance reserve for appropriation account to 200 public safety, $587,592. The sum of $6,629,690 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, town employee benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $11,095,667 to be expended on the direction of the town manager, and to authorize the town manager to transfer $1,021,396 of the funds from item 900 to the OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance benefits for eligible retirees and to expend such funds for that purpose. The sum of $43,087 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits reserve to be immediately transferred and added to item 1,000, SPS town employee benefits reserve, so that the employee benefits reserve total will be $67,812, to be expended under the town manager for the purpose of increasing the amount required for item 900 to the extent necessary for those purposes. Any balance may be expended at the direction of town manager with the approval of the Finance Committee, subject to the provision that any balance of the funds transferred from the school budget and receiving such approval shall be returned to the Sudbury Public Schools budget. Said amounts voted hereunder in excess of the non-override column are contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose at a special town election, and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements, and to authorize multi-year contracts in excess of 3 years, either by renewal, extension, or purchase options, in accordance with the provisions of Mass General Law 30B, Section 12, upon determination by the Chief Procurement Officer to be the most advantageous option.
Does it receive a second? It does. Does the Finance Committee wish to say anything else?
No,
Finance Committee is all set. Before I get to the selectmen, this is the last slide. The magic words are the first three lines of this slide to answer Mr. Coe's question on the limiting motion, which is, set amounts voted hereunder in excess of the non-override column, that would be $553,000. If you look at your sheet, it's in the last column marked difference. That is the difference between the override and the non-override column, are contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose at a special town election, which is June 7th. So again, to reiterate, a town council added these words because he is of the opinion that we will save another town the expense of another town meeting. So rather than having a if the override budget here passes, and let's just assume in this in Mr. Coe's statement that it then goes to the June 7th ballot, and it fails there. Do we have to have another town meeting to set a ballot, to set a budget? And the answer is no, because of these words that say we'll automatically go back to the non-override budget, which is $553,000 less than the override budget. Having said that, did the selectmen want to add anything to that presentation?
No, Mr. Moderator.
Okay. Anybody wish to add anything? Oh, no, we don't want you to add anything yet, because we have to go through, as we talked about before, we have to go through the line items. So we will now use the same procedure that we've used for the last two decades. I will start by reading the budget in numerical order by title, beginning with line item 100. And it's, again, it's on your handout of the correct numbers. If anyone has a motion to amend or a question, just raise your hand. For example, I will say 200 public safety. No, I won't say. Yes, I will. I'll say 200 public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200 public safety? If someone has a motion to amend, it must be in one of two forms. I move to increase 200 public safety to the sum of X and to reduce, for example, line item 600, culture and recreation, to the sum of Y. Those two numbers must match. Or the second form you can say is, I move to reduce 200 public safety to the sum of X. But you cannot say as a motion, I move to increase 200 public safety to the sum of X, because that would exceed the limiting motion that we already just voted, and it would be even more than the override number. So we will debate and vote on any motion to amend, if there is one, and we will arrive at the end of this process with a main motion as it may be amended, and we will vote on it. So, any motion to amend or questions involving any of the following, I'll read them slowly one at a time, and if you have any questions or motions to amend or comments, please raise your hand, your card. So number one is line 300, Sudbury Public Schools net. We'll even include the balcony on this one. The next line item is SPS, Sudbury Public Schools, employee benefits. Next is LS, operating assessment net. Oh, I missed one. Excuse me. SPS, employee benefits reserve. LS, operating assessment net. Yes, please.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. I move to reduce the budget to $18,079,955.
Wait, slow down here. Are you talking about line item 300, the one I just read?
Yes, sir.
So it's LS operating assessment net. The number is $18,632,955, and you wish to reduce it to what?
$18,079,955.
Which is the non-override. You want to go from the override number to the non-override number.
Correct.
Okay. Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Mr. DePompei, would you like to speak to your motion to amend?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. I have difficulty with some of the logic that's being applied. Even though there may be I've heard the term bubble in special education, it seems to me that that bubble in special education was at one time a bubble in the Sudbury public school system, and therefore there should have been a couple of years to plan for that bubble as it proceeded from the Sudbury public school system into the high school. Under that rationale, there should have been an incentive for more productive negotiations, where in fact there is some control of cost, which is the benefits portion of the contract.
So rather than look at it as the entire override that's being asked for by Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School is due to the special education, from my perspective, it's due to the increase in benefits in the teacher's contract. That was a controllable item, not the special education. So I have difficulty with the argument that was presented to justify it. The other difficulty I have with this is to produce a good product or to carry out your mandated assignment is not necessarily a matter of spending money, but it's also a matter of good leadership. Good leadership doesn't always get the most money. It's a matter of leading your people. I think it's inappropriate. I guess I have a question before I say it's inappropriate. But I'm going under the assumption that the health benefits that are included for the teachers at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School are better than the health benefits that will be held by the employees of the town or Sudbury Public School System. I think that sets a very questionable example in terms of sustainability of the entire operating budget for Sudbury as we enter new phases of negotiation at the other cost centers.
Mr. DePompei, you said better. You mean in terms of it's more expensive or there are more benefits or both?
From my perspective, it looks to me like it's both. It looks to me like we're spending more per teacher on health care at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School than we are at the town cost center or at Sudbury Public Schools.
Okay.
And it seems to be all attributable to, I guess it's step increases along with health care.
Okay.
And I'd just like more discussion on that as to why we feel that's an appropriate way to proceed for a sustainable Sudbury.
Okay. Mark Collins for the LS Regional School Committee. First, Mark, can you answer the question about are the benefits better or more expensive? And then the remainder you can comment or answer.
Yes, thank you very much for your question. The very clear answer to your question is that in fiscal 11, Lincoln Sudbury's per employee cost for health insurance benefits is roughly $300 less than that paid for the town of Sudbury. What we have is over a period of time at Lincoln Sudbury, we have wrestled with the question of rising health care costs. We were ahead of the curve. We got there before many neighboring districts, and we've asked our employees to pay 30% of those increased costs. We have heard from the Board of Selectmen and from the Finance Committee that going forward in the next contract negotiation, we should look at more creative ways to address these rising health care costs. We intend to do that. So the very direct answer to your question is we're better positioned than the town. We're better positioned than most communities in this area. Thank you.
Okay. Does the Finance Committee wish to comment on the motion to amend?
No.
Does the Selectman wish to comment on the motion to amend? Do the selectmen wish to comment on the motion to amend?
Yes, two of us are opposed to the motion. One is in favor of the motion.
Thank you. Anybody else? Now, this is strictly on the motion to amend to reduce line item 300 LS operating assessment net, reduce it by $553,000. Yes, could you stand up, please? And could you give the woman a mic, please?
My name is Rebecca Chisler. I'm at 21 Whitetail Lane. I know we all have economic woes. However, the more you cut this high school budget, the less the school will be able to take care of those children with special needs, and more of them will have to go out of district. And those costs are significantly high. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that I'm concerned with increased class sizes and less support, a lot of the children won't be able to go to the school, and they will get out-of-district placements.
Any other comments on the motion to amend? By the way, if anyone up in the balcony wishes to speak, you're going to have to come down to the floor. But you can vote from there. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. As I'm hearing this, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, these 12 or 15 kids or whatever it is are scheduled to arrive at LS in the fall that we're budgeting for. And it seems to me that the likelihood is they came from the Sudbury Public Schools. And the Sudbury Public Schools were paying, in round numbers, $553,000 for the tuition for these kids outside of the Sudbury schools. Now they arrive at LS's doorstep. LS says, well, now we need $553,000 to educate these kids that just arrived here. Did anybody consider that maybe Sudbury Public Schools no longer needs $553,000 to outsource these kids now that they're gone from Sudbury Public Schools? Did anybody in the system talk to each other and say, can we move $553,000 out of Sudbury Public Schools into LS to pay for these kids so that we don't have to cut teaching positions and other professional and staff positions if we don't get the money? And has anybody considered, if we give LS the $553,000 so that they don't have to cut teaching positions and other professional positions and staff positions, as they showed us on the view graph, that means that Sudbury Public Schools has a windfall of $553,000 that's in their budget, and this is what's wrong with our budgeting system in this town and right on up through the state and federal levels. Money goes into budgets and it never comes out. There's a concept known as zero-based budgeting. You go back to zero every year and you budget for what you need for the coming year. Government doesn't do that. Government starts with, this is what we had last year. Everything you see on
view. Mr. Evans. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm speaking in favor of the motion to amend, Mr. Moderator. Yeah.
Okay, but let's stick away from the state and the federal government and keep on with the LS and the school budget.
The problem is that everything we've seen on view graphs and the questions that we hear at town meeting. How much is our tax going to go up if we do the override? How much is our tax going to go up if we don't do the override? Nobody ever asks about what can we do to get our tax down. This $553,000 is likely by this town meeting to be voted into the LS budget, and there's going to be $553,000 windfall to the Sudbury Public School budget, and it's never coming out. And the way to fix this problem is to move the $553,000 from Sudbury Public Schools to LS. And I don't think it's the job of the people at town meeting to try and figure that out on the floor. I think that the various officials involved in the process should have brought that to us to avoid the problem in the first place. I support the motion to amend. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Let's start with the local school committee. Susan Giuliano, the chairperson, then we'll move on to LS to see if they have answers to those questions or comments.
I'll try to address several of the questions that have come up.
A little closer to the mic.
Okay. I'll do this. Thanks. I know that LS will address in more detail the details of the $653,000 cost increase, but that increase is made up of students transferring from the Sudbury Public Schools students transferring from the Lincoln Public Schools, and students who are currently at LS but are going out of district. My understanding, and I know people will correct me if I get something wrong, is that of students who were out of district in Sudbury Public Schools and are now moving to LS, we have 10 students transferring. Of those 10, two of them are in our CASE collaborative program, and so we pay for them for a delayed year. So LS is responsible for paying for 8 students. And those costs are, I believe, roughly $450,000 for that increase. So I also want to, without going into great detail about how Circuit Breaker works, make very clear that the Sudbury Public Schools will receive no windfall from receiving any additional funds from Circuit Breaker next year or from money that might have been set aside or that we had been spending on these students. The Sudbury Public Schools in the last several years have dealt with many of the vagaries of special education costs, lots of ups and downs over the years, and have addressed them in a number of ways, in part by seeking to control costs with our special education programming, but also to move towards sustainability in our overall budget. And part of what we've had to do in the last few years is, of course, reduce other programming. In fiscal year 09 and 11, we laid off approximately 29.5 FTEs, in part, as we were dealing with costs. So we don't have a bucket of money that could go with these students forward. What we have done, in fact, we have cut other positions, and we now need to move forward to restore some of those positions. If money is transferred from the Sudbury Public Schools to LS, we will, in fact, end up with two sets of problems in terms of the impacts of the reductions across our educational programming K-12. And just to give you a sense of the scale of the Circuit Breaker program, this is a reimbursement program. The state has a line item that provides reimbursement for costs that have already been expended in the special education realm. And when you look at the cost for a special education student, a certain portion, roughly $40,000, is not eligible for reimbursement. Only costs above that amount are eligible for reimbursement. And then that's on a per student basis, and it's on this percentage set by the state. One of the advantages we have tonight in having our later town meeting is that we're aware the state is now projecting a higher percentage reimbursement rate than we've had in the past few years. The Sudbury Public Schools has been dealing with these expenses during a time that reimbursement rate has gone down to 40%. Next year, our hope and our expectation is it will be up to 65%. But what that means is that the Sudbury Public Schools will receive some reimbursement for a portion of the cost we've expended over prior years that will help us from cutting more staff as we go forward. Next year, our out-of-district expenses are still projected to be about $2 million. Our total special education expenses, about $2.8 million in total, including that $2 million. We have another $5 million that we're spending in-district. And the money that we're projected to receive from the state to help reimburse some of the money we've spent is about $650,000. So this is in no way a windfall. I also want to note that this is a subject that we've talked about carefully with the Finance Committee, with the LS School Committee, throughout the budget process. And while we are very concerned about the cuts and the impact at LS, we would be doubly concerned, again, if we had to face those impacts going forward. One of the, I just want to mention one of the most important factors is that we've addressed these problems with the assistance of our teachers' union and our staff, who have been part of a collaborative process in addressing these problems and reducing our costs. Because of their efforts, we are able in the non-override budget to keep a level staff and to, in fact, begin to restore or add positions that we've lost in recent years. And so as part of that process, they have helped us to save jobs and to save programs, and if that money were then transferred out of our district, it would be sending the wrong message going forward as we seek to continue working on these efforts with our staff. Finally, in closing, I'm really almost done, I want to encourage everyone here to vote against this motion and to, in fact, support the override for these LS costs. While I've described the situation at the Sudbury Public Schools, LS has also been stretched in recent years in terms of budget restrictions, and the impact of these cuts would significantly harm the education of the students there. Our school committee has voted unanimously to support the override. Can we stop?
LS all set? Scott, hang on a sec. I let this go with John Brackett. I mean, the guy's a saint. He had a standing ovation, but no more clapping, no booing, no hissing, no groaning, nothing. Scott.
But feel free to clap for me. No.
Your time's up.
All right. I first want to acknowledge that I have sort of a bit of a conflict on this one because I am a Sudbury resident with kids in the Sudbury K-8 system, and I would acknowledge that moving money out of the Sudbury Public Schools budget to the Lincoln Sudbury budget would disadvantage my own children. And I just want to kind of put that out there because the bubble that's hitting us is one that Sudbury Public has struggled with for the last several years. I mean, it's one of the reasons why during the past years there have been reductions at SPS, and those reductions are going to be hitting the high school too. And I do think that we, you know, when we look at the class sizes that we have in some of our elementary school classrooms and say, you know, can we do better? I would say yes, and I would support us having Sudbury Public go and enhance some of the, you know, some of their classrooms and try to bring down that class size. Again, if I go back to what I was saying in my remarks, one of the hallmarks that makes Lincoln Sudbury really strong is a strong K-8 system. And we need to keep the K-8 system strong so that we have good outcomes here at the high school.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak on the motion to amend to reduce the LS operating assessment net by $553,000? Can we put the motion back on the screen? Or you don't have it? I will repeat it. Normally, Mr. DePompei, in the future, I need something in writing. Otherwise, we won't accept an amendment. But this is a pretty simple one, so we'll give it to you orally. Move to amend line 300, LS operating net, to reduce the override column amount of $18,632,955 to the non-override column amount of $18,079,955, or a reduction of $553,000. Before we go for a vote, I see one more hand up over there. Can we get a mic?
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. There's one question that I think the first questioner brought up that still hasn't been answered, although I know Scott has answered it to me in private. So I appreciate it if you could answer it to the hall, and that is, can you carry the money over year to year? And my understanding of that is the answer to that is no. That so when folks say, well, you should see this coming down the pike and you should have this money available in the future, 3 years out, 4 years out, I don't believe that's a budgetable system under our current budget standing. And I'd appreciate it if someone could address that from the schools.
Mr. Carbon, is the answer yes? Hang on. Can you just stand up and grab a mic right behind you?
The answer is we can carry over money for 1 year to help offset circuit breaker costs, but we can't. It's not like planning for college where you see it off in the future and you can keep, you know, start banking it for tuitions in the future.
Okay. Any other questions or comments before we vote on the motion to amend? Anybody? Yes. Can you stand up, please?
Mark Libby, 40 Patricia Road. I had a question for FinCom. Could you tell us the relative health care costs per employee for town, Sudbury Public Schools and Lincoln Sudbury?
Depends on how you want. Yeah. I wanted to actually defer to the town manager.
Okay. This is town manager Maureen Valente.
And I may defer to the assistant town manager to have that. It depends on how you define the question. There's the cost of plans, and the plans may not be identical. You may have a Blue Cross plan or a Tufts plan that's not identical to another one. We've looked at it. We've seen our cost of plans that are as close as can be are about the same or somewhat lower than LS. The cost per employee depends on how many employees take it and if they're individual, if they're family, and a lot of those kind of suggestions. So we like to look at sort of the cost per plan, and then you have who signs up for it. And we can give some of that information from the assistant town managers, our HR director, and oversees benefits for both the town and SPS.
Mary Ann Bellidoux, the assistant town manager. Can you answer that question?
Yes, I can.
Let's hear it.
By plan, the town pays for a family plan anywhere between $9,661.50 up to a maximum of $16,111.87. From what we can see from LS, and please correct me if I'm wrong, with the full amount that's paid, it ranges from $12,747.84 to a maximum of $35,364. We have a higher percent of family plans, 72% as opposed to 70%. So that would drive up the per employee cost.
Thank you. Is that number correct, or you have a... Mark Collins, Chair.
Thank you. The fact is, in fiscal 11, the average cost per employee for health insurance benefits at Lincoln Sudbury was approximately $12,000. The average cost per employee elsewhere, regionally, exceeds that. I don't have access to all the numbers from the town, but I have been advised, after looking at several offerings in last year's warrant, that the town of Sudbury paid per employee approximately $12,300 for health insurance benefits for active employees. So we are in the same ballpark, and it is absolutely clear that going forward, everybody needs to do a better job. But we wrestled with this problem in advance. We've moved our employees again from 25% to 30% in terms of contribution that they pay for their health insurance. The town of Sudbury moved from 10% and is moving forward with new employees to the rate that we set at 30%. So the fact is we're all getting better. We all need to work with the health insurance industry to improve our setup here in town. But Lincoln Sudbury was here first, and this has helped taxpayers in both Sudbury and Lincoln.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on the motion to amend? Please stand.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road. I think the fact of the matter is whether this override passes or not is probably not going to be settled in this room. It's probably going to be settled out at the special election. I think most people, at least from the earlier vote, it's going to pass overwhelming. And I don't think a limiting motion will pass, and I could be wrong. I voted for the override, and I'll vote for it at the special election. I don't think the override is going to pass at the special election, though, if we keep getting spun by the LS School Committee on what's actually going on the costs. I feel like I sat through two town meetings here. I've got FinCom over here on a vote of 5-4, telling me that there's issues with the contract, telling me there's issues with the health care plans, and there's also issues with special education. And I got the school committee here telling me it's just all special education. Somewhere in the middle, we've got to get the credible information out to the voters so we can pass the special election. The one point I'll point out, we talked about this incentive that we provide for health care. What was not revealed is that 70% of the savings on the change from the rate saver plan down to the rate saver plan is actually passed back to the employees. So, yes, we all need to do a better job. We need credible communication out to the voters of the town so we can attempt to get this passed at the special election. And we need factual information from everybody. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on just the motion to amend? Raise your hand. I see none, so we're going to proceed to a vote. Again, this is on the motion to amend, which is a pretty good job up in the view graph. Okay? So this is the motion to amend is if you want to reduce the 300 line item for LS as shown in the view graph by $553,000, if you're in favor of doing that, signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed. It's really overwhelming. There are only about a couple dozen votes in favor, and the vast majority are opposed. It is defeated. So we're now going to move on to, still on line 300, LS debt assessment. Any questions or motion to amend? I see none. The next item is LSEND. That's excess and deficiency?
Correct.
Okay. Anybody have any motion to amend or questions on that? Yes, ma'am. Yes, can you put back a handout back on the screen? E and D, there's nothing in those columns. Okay. Any other questions on E and D? Okay, we're now going to move on to Minuteman Regional Assessment. Any questions or motion to amend? Can you stand up, please? Thank you.
Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. I just have a question. I noticed that the Minuteman assessment is the same for the non-override and the override, but it is a lot more than the amount appropriated for fiscal year 2011. Now, is that because there are a different number of students who choose Minuteman, or is there some other reason for that?
Is either a employee of Minuteman, or I see, is that David Mangeris? Is the Sudbury representative appointed by me to the Minuteman, and he's here to try and answer that question.
Dave Mangeris, 47 Firecut Lane. The enrollment has increased. As a matter of fact, they went from 10 to 16 students, and those are the numbers that we received, or the school received, from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Physically, there are 18 students now attending Minuteman from Sudbury.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Any other question or motion to amend? I see no one else, so we'll move on to the next category, other regional school assessment. And that's zero. And now we're going to go down to line 100, general government. Line 200, public safety. Line 400, public works. Line 500, human services. Line 600, culture and recreation. Line 900, town employee benefits. Line 900, town-wide operating and transfer. Line 1,000, SPS Town Employees Benefits Reserve. And line item 700, Town Debt Service.
Okay. We're... Can we... That's the breakdown. Do you have the main... Oh, it's on several slides. Does anyone have any questions on the four or five slides that the Finance Committee presented in the motion? It's this column, the override column, 79, 652, 861. And then there's money being transferred between accounts to make everything balance. Does anyone have any questions on that before we get a vote? I will ask, yes, please rise. You come around, just come up in the front all the way around. It'd be easier for you to hand it to him. Thank you.
Adam Miller, Penobscot Road. I have a general question regarding, should the override budget fail at the election, that there isn't a mechanism to go through this line item process and make adjustments within the non-override budget?
No, it would all go back to the column marked non-override budget.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but my question is that it seems there's no, if somebody, if assuming that there will be a, if you assume for a minute that there would be a non-override budget, that there's no procedure to go through the line item like we have just done, to make adjustments in that circumstance.
That's correct. Okay. After the town ballot, that's what tonight was for. If anyone wanted to do that, and someone wanted to reduce, and that was it.
I still see that there's an issue here, though, the only motion amend we had in the line item process we just went through was essentially relative to the override or non-override budget. But if I can foresee circumstances where people would want to keep the line items as they are in an override budget. But should that override budget not pass at the town election, that they'd want to make changes in the non-override budget, and that there's no contingency here to
changing all the line items.
Well, no. If there wanted to be adjustments within the line items, should the override budget not pass?
Adam, we that's what we've been doing for the last hour, to see if anyone wants to do that, and no one has, so we're ready to vote on the entire motion. In other words, there's only one override item in this entire budget.
I understand.
And there was a motion to reduce it, and it failed. So what will happen is, to the ballot, mm-hmm. will go the entire 553 override question.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes through, then the budget will be what you see in the override column. If it fails, then the budget will be what you see in the non-override column. That's what's going to happen.
All right, I understand that already.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions before we vote? Okay. All those in favor of the main motion, part of which you see on the view graph, on the main budget, please signify by raising your cards. Yeah, I'm okay. Okay. We a little while, about an hour ago, we voted on the limiting motion to say the most we want to spend is what you see in this handout on the override bottom line, $79,652,861. We voted that's the most we want to spend. The next motion, and that passed. The next motion was made by the Finance Committee to break down that $79,652,861. That was this motion that we're voting on right now. So we asked if anybody wanted to change any of these line items. There was one motion to amend. It failed. So what you're looking at is you're voting on the in your handout, the column marked override, and that's the distribution of the $79,652,861. That's this vote. Everyone understand that? Okay. So if you're in favor of the override, you want to vote yes. If you're against the override, you want to vote no. If you're not sure, you want to abstain. All those in favor of the motion as it appears in the view graph signify by raising your cards. You were right. Not everyone understood the question because there's more hands up. All those against. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. There's about 24 hands opposed. The other number, which is probably closer to 400, voted in favor. So the main budget motion passes. We can move on to Article 5. Mr. Cohen in the office, in the audience here to make a presentation? This is the capital budget. Go right ahead and make the motion, please.
Move to appropriate the sum of $638,947 set forth in the column override for FY12 as printed in the handout dated May 2, 2011 for the purchase or acquisition of the following capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, continuing payment of existing lease purchases, construction, engineering, and design, including but not limited to the renovation of buildings. Said sum to be raised by taxation, the sum of $90,000 can be immediately transferred and added to item 300, Sudbury Public Schools, net appropriated under the FY12 override and non-override columns voted under Article 4, FY12 budget, and to allow the purchase of equipment hereunder by entering into lease purchasing agreements, said amounts voted hereunder in excess of the non-override column are contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose at a special town election.
Is that it, Adam? That's everything? You finished reading it? Okay, I heard a second. Now, if you still have your handout, if you look at the bottom half, you'll see the override number, which is in this motion, 638,947. Versus the non-override number, 538,947, a difference of $100,000. Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. So what's in the capital budget? It includes single-year cost assets over $10,000, as well as multi-year cost assets of more than $100,000. And the way the budget was determined, we got all the capital requests from the various departments, which came out to about $1.2 million. And we were given a non-override FY12 budget target of $538,947. That represented a 1.9% increase from FY11. And the approved non-override budget that we're putting in front of you is at that level, $538,947. We are also requesting an override FY12 budget of $638,947. The first item relates to the vehicles purchased by DPW in previous years. They were purchased in five-year leases, and these are years 2 through 5 of the leases. It's important to note that they're purchased through five-year leases, but they actually stay with the town for 15 to 20 years, so they have a much longer life than that 5 years. That total is $261,453,000, and that's being voted for our non-override budget. The next item is the purchase of new vehicles for the DPW department. We had seven vehicles requested for a total of $218,000. Four of them were for purchases. Four of them were for new leases. Two were for outright purchases, and then there was also a request for a building for the Parks and Ground group. We approved three of the vehicles for a total of $55,490, and these are all five-year leases as well. I think it's important to note that we had $37,000 in lease payments expire this year from FY07, and expect $71,000 next year to expire as well. From the various building and facilities, from the Parks and Rec Department and the Building Department and SPS, we had a number of different requests. From the Parks and Rec, we had a handicap doors button activation, which was $23,000. From the Building Department, we had a various building improvements fund, and what this is it enables the building manager to use some discretion in terms of where those funds are allocated as the needs arise throughout the year. And then we had a number of other requests as well for some roof projects. And then with SPS, we had a request for an addressable fire alarm for the Nixon School. And what that is the current fire alarm at the Nixon School is done in zones. So if there is a fire, you can tell what zone it is, but you can't tell where exactly within the building it is. All the other Sudbury schools have what's called an addressable system, which means that at the center console, you know exactly where the fire is, and all new schools that are being built have that technology as well. This is an important piece of investment in order to protect the asset, the Nixon School, and so we recommended that as well. And then there were a number of other lower priority requests from the SPS. Total of these requests were $349,000, and we recommended $149,600. The other requests came from the public safety and the town. So the police requested a new dispatch unit for $99,000. We did not approve that for a number of reasons, partially because the justification for the unit was that it would be shared with the fire department, but that was never approved with the fire department, and then partially because we expected there to be some regionalization of the dispatch function. From the building department, they need to replace a pickup truck for a cost of $22,396. We approve that. The fire department is requesting a replacement of car 3, which is the chief's car, the first response vehicle. The car is 5 years old, and those typically get replaced on 3-year cycles, so it needs to be replaced, and we voted for that. Car 2 replacement, which is the second vehicle for the department, we voted not to replace. There are a number of other items, one of them being a division of occupational safety items for outstations. That's the stations 2 and 3. There's a number of items that are needed to improve the working conditions of those stations. The fire department's done a good job of improving some of those things, but they need additional funds in order to continue to do it. Station 2 traffic light, which is Route 20. You may recall a number of years ago we approved $25,000 to fund that. When it actually went out to bid, it came out closer to $60,000, so it was a lot more than what was initially projected, and we voted not to approve that request. Goodman Hill radio generator is something that was requested last year. It's a backup generator to the backup repeater system, and we voted again not to fund it this year. And then finally, there were four requests from the town, including an email archiving system, a Canon copier, and a town hall design study. We voted not to approve any of these, and they were assigned lower priorities by the town manager as well. We are requesting an override for $100,000, and the use of that is going to be to fund the lease purchasing of two new sidewalk tractors. These are the tractors that go around and clear the snow from your sidewalk in the winter. You may recall we had a very difficult winter this year, and the town owns three of these vehicles. At one point, all three of them were broken down this winter, so really, really difficult conditions. But two of the vehicles in particular are very old. They're from 1984 and 1988, respectively, and need to be replaced. They're no longer serviceable and no longer able to provide that service for the town. So the expected cost per vehicle is about $135,000, what we've been told. And what we'd like to do is, or what DPW would like to do, is lease two of the vehicles at a cost of about $50,000 each per year, or a total of $100,000. The proposal was supported by both the Board of Selectmen as well as the FinCom, and unanimously approved by the CIPC. In summary, we were given $101.2 million in requests originally. We our non-override budget is $538,947. And we're requesting an additional $100,000 in our override budget for $638,947.
You all set?
Yep.
Thank you. Marty Raganis for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Larry O'Brien for the Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen unanimously supports.
Okay. I just want to point out again the magic words in the slide. Set amounts voted hereunder in excess of the non-override column are contingent upon passage of a ballot question for that purpose of the special election. So if it passes here and it doesn't pass at the special election, it automatically goes down $100,000 to the non-override amount without need for another town meeting. Anybody wish to be heard? Yes, could you stand up, please? Is there a voice? Oh, there he is.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I have two questions. First, since this part is capital, does that mean it does not become part of the permanent tax levy?
Mr. O'Brien? Or
thank you, Mr. Moderator. The way this is structured, it will be an operating override question, so it will become a permanent increase to the tax levy as well as a permanent increase to the capital budget, as Mr. Cohen described.
Second question. Will this and the school override be on the ballot as two separate items?
Yes, ma'am. It will be a second question. It will be listed as a capital items, and it will stand on its own for $100,000.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Well, the obvious follow-up question, why isn't this on the ballot as a capital override rather than an operating override?
I presume you're asking as a capital exclusion to pay for it in 1 year?
Yes.
The decision was made that on the advice of the Finance Committee and the opinion of the Board of Selectmen as well as the Capital Improvement Committee that placing them on three-year leases would be a preferred way of doing it, and the added benefit after those leases have been completed is we will own the two pieces of equipment and we will have expanded our capital budget by $100,000. And as you can see by the series of zeros that Mr. Cohen showed, there is a need well beyond the extremely small budget that the Capital Planning Committee operates with year in and year out.
I guess one just minor follow-up to that. Will it be plainly indicated on the ballot that this is an operating override? Because most people are used to seeing capital items as a capital exclusion.
I'll defer maybe to town council as to exactly how it'll be written. I'm going to defer to town council because there are particular ways as to the way the question has to be presented on the ballot. The preamble will say that, but which will be in the information you receive at your home. The information that will be actually in the question when you go into the booth and draw your curtain, we're extremely limited by state statute, and I think it will indicate it's for DPW equipment, but maybe not as to the effect of a capital exclusion versus an operating override. And I'll let town council opine on the rest of that.
You all set, Mr. Coe?
Are you? I thought you were going to get the town council to opine on that.
Paul, do you want to try that? Is it going to say is the wording it hasn't been worked? So, Brian, has the wording already gone to press, or it has? Does anyone have a copy of it?
The vote, if I may answer that, Mr. Moderator, was taken by the Board of Selectmen last week and transmitted to the town clerk, and it did say it was an operating override.
Operational is the answer. Thank you.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. This is a significant difference because an operating override is a permanent step up in the base of our taxes, whereas a capital override you pay off and it melts down and off the it's a debt exclusion melts off the our tax bill.
Right. I think that's what Mr. O'Brien had said previously. Anybody else wish to make a comment? Yes, in the middle, please stand.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. Is there any restriction on this money that keeps it as a cap, that the ongoing $100,000 a year is restricted to capital funds, or does this money go into the general fund to be used as the town sees fit?
In the first year, it's absolutely committed because of the fact that it's on a lease, and it is the intention of the Board of Selectmen to leave that money there. And earlier this evening, the town manager, when meeting with the Finance Committee, expressed the same commitment to them that this will remain permanently over in the capital budget.
So it does not revert to general funds after the third year. It continues in the capital budget. Is there any language on this that restricts the money to be used in that way?
Technically speaking, any amount of money in the capital budget, all the way up to every last dollar in it, could be moved to the general fund on any given year. It is our intention, though, to raise the amount of money by the increase the amount of money in the capital budget by the $100,000, and to leave it there, since the ongoing needs what the Board of Selectmen feels is the need to protect our infrastructure investment, it will remain there.
At whose discretion could it be used otherwise?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question, Ms. Moderator.
He said that it could go into the general fund,
right.
But it's not their intention to do so.
But it is not their intention. So my question is, this is sort of an ongoing commitment by the Board of Selectmen going forward. The Board of Selectmen could decide otherwise, or the town manager could decide otherwise. Who could make that decision to do something else in the future?
Finance Committee, anybody can propose to use dollars differently, but it's town meeting that makes the appropriations.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Could you stand up all the way in the back on this side?
Bill Cooper, Cedar Creek Road. Mr. Moderator, in light of the discussion tonight, is it in order the amendment be made to change this from a continuing override to a one-time capital override?
Can you repeat that, please?
Is it in order that the motion be amended so that it will be a one-time capital override to the budget and not a continuing authorization on the debt limit, on the 2.5% Proposition 2.5 limit each year?
Sure. Well, I can answer it two ways. The answer is that last week the Board of Selectmen voted to put this on the ballot, so we're tied into that. And secondly, if we were going to do a debt exclusion, you would have to modify both the language and the amount. But since it was already voted last week to put it onto the ballot, the only option is to vote yes or no this evening in favor of the way the question has been structured.
It seems to me that you've got the cart before the horse if you're bringing something to an annual meeting that has these kinds of implications, where you have alternatives for something which is a one-time deal or something which is going to be a continuing deal. It seems that's something that the annual meeting ought to be able to make the decision on whether to go one way or the other.
And it can tonight.
But only by voting it up or down.
That's what Mr. O'Brien said.
Does town council agree?
Yes.
End of discussion.
Yes.
The selectmen are the only ones that can make that determination. The time for a different determination would be made by the town meeting voting that down. But once it's voted, the Board of Selectmen make the determination as to how it's on the ballot, or if it is even on the ballot.
Anyone have another comment or question? Yes, ma'am. Can you stand up?
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. I need to. I'd like to reiterate what the other gentleman said. I walk every day my kids to school. I couldn't walk a lot this year because of the snow and the sidewalks. We trudged through. We looked at snowshoes even this year for the first time. So I'm totally supportive that we need snowplows for the sidewalks. Absolutely no question there. But I totally disagree with the idea that it has to be a continuous permanent thing on our tax levy. If we buy them, we get our tax levy up for paying off the leases. After that, it should go back. I mean, this is another gentleman said about zero budgeting. This is an example where it could have gone back to, okay, pay off the lease, done. We're going to have them longer after the lease is paid off. That's great. We'll get more use out of them, which is fantastic. But I don't see why it needs to stay as a permanent increase on our tax levy.
Is, while We respect your opinion on it falling off the tax rolls after the particular items have been paid off. It is the opinion of both the unanimous vote of the Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen that there is a dire need to expand the capital budget. And with the way finances have been so restricted over the last few years, this is an opportunity to put a very small amount, $100,000, additional into a capital budget that, as you saw in Mr. Cohen's presentation, as I previously stated, numerous items that go unfunded from year to year, and then we wind up in a crisis mode when our DPW director or fire chief or police chief are coming in, building inspector, et cetera, with something that's permanently broken and must be replaced, and then we have to deal with it in a crisis mode. We're trying to move towards good, solid budgeting and having the money available where we can preserve our infrastructure and then not have to face the questions from this body as to, well, why didn't you plan for that by having an appropriate budget? So we're trying to get the budget to a level where it is more appropriately funded for the needs that the town currently has and foresees in both the near and distant planning.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir. How many people wish to speak and add something new to the discussion? Raise your hand. I see one hand. To govern the hall in their vote to call the question. All those in favor of the...
Mr. Moderator, you recognized this gentleman before the call of the question.
No, it was a...
Hang on. Thank you, Mr. Coe. Does anyone else wish to speak beside Mr. Abrams? Is it for a question or a comment, Mr. Abrams?
Comment, Mr. Moderator.
How long?
Short, Mr. Moderator.
Go ahead, please.
I think that the correct answer to Mr. Cooper's question, with all due respect to what others have said, is of course he can move to amend that. What's happened is... the selectmen have painted us into a corner and, as was mentioned, put the cart before the horse because now that's what they put on the ballot that we're going to vote on June 7th. And if Mr. Cooper did amend and if it passed, then we'd have a mess. But as the woman on the other side of the hall said earlier, she doesn't necessarily want to see this be here forever. What the selectmen should have done in a non-override fashion is they should have come to the town meeting and said, our capital budget is too low and we need to raise it by $100,000, and it should have been in a non-override budget. Having said all of that, it's the only thing I've heard tonight that the entire Finance Committee and the entire Board of Selectmen agree on. So, notwithstanding those comments, I'd say don't do this to us in the future, but we ought to pass this now. Thank you.
Very good. All those in favor of the motion as it appears in the view graph, which is the override for an additional $100,000, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. Mr. Drabinski, do I have a motion to adjourn to tomorrow at 7:30?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. So moved.
Is there a second? There is. All those in favor, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. Thank you very much.